what day it is.
Yeah, I know. But this woman, I would have thought, this woman sounded very with it. Listen to this.
Do you know who you're going to vote for in this election?
Obama. I just don't like Romney.
What is it about Mitt Romney that you don't like?
Is it that he's pro-choice or...
Yes, and it's just his general, it's him in general. I just don't like him.
Because he's a Muslim?
No, it has nothing to do with religion or what his views are. I just don't like him.
Do you think Obama made the right choice by choosing Paul Ryan as his vice president?
Yes.
Do you think he picked Paul Ryan because he's African American or because he's qualified?
It could be a little bit of both.
And do you think McCain has a shot this time out to beat Obama for this election?
No. I just don't see McCain as like presidential material. I don't see it.
What percentage of the vote do you think McCain will get over Obama this time?
About 20, I guess.
If Obama wins this time, are you hoping that we finally catch and kill Osama bin Laden?
Honestly, I don't agree with the whole war thing, but if we, you know...
Do you think he should just go to jail then, bin Laden?
Yeah, he can be tortured, but, you know, I don't believe in killing.
How long of a jail term do you think bin Laden should get when we find him?
It should be indefinite.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy? Yeah! Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Monday, 24th day of September, 2012. Hope you had a great weekend. The Dow's down 25 points, S&P down 4, comp down 21, crude off $1.59, gold down $12.80, and Apple down, could it be? Apple down $10. You know, the first 24 hours after the launch of the iPhone 5, the world was stunned by record sales. Now that we've made it through the first weekend, not so much. Only 5 million units sold, and they were estimates of 8 to 10. Many are writing and squawking that this could not have happened on Steve Jobs' watch. Now, while everything else is down today, while the tech world obsesses over the Apple iPhone, Google just set a new all-time high. Not sure what's driving Google. It's been on a run for a while. The best guess, YouTube is growing. Android is dominating. Search isn't going anywhere. Display is growing. And Facebook just isn't the threat that people thought it might be. So while Apple is down $10 today, Google is up like $12.68, almost 2%, trading at $746.67. Moving right along, if you did buy the iOS 5, or you did upgrade to iOS 6, and you don't like the maps, there is a surprising answer to fix that, and it's called Nokia. How could that be? I'll post a link tonight in the show notes on the blog. But if you go to the Nokia website and maneuver your way around to their, it's a little bit complicated to give you on air. Maybe I'll post it in the chat room during the broadcast today. But you got to go to mformobile.nokia, and you actually have to point your smartphone browser there, not your desktop browser. So, again, it's a little complicated, so what I'll do is I'll try to put it in the show notes tonight, or either I'll post it in the chat room today. You can actually put the Nokia Maps app on your iPhone 5, and the reviews for the Nokia Maps app is... they're pretty stunning and fast and, best of all, accurate. There's no train stations in the middle of the ocean or any of the other nonsense. Now, the map thing on iPhone 5 or iOS 6, they say that it's, for, in the U.S., it's really not a problem. It's only in Europe that TomTom got confused, and TomTom is working to get this all squared away. But again, just more ammunition for those who say this would have never happened on Steve Jobs' watch. All right, Morgan Stanley news out today. We can see QE4 by the end of the year.
Oh!
Now, I don't even know how that's possible, because the Fed said we're going to print to infinity. Remember, this is... We had QE1, QE2, QE3, and then QEI. We're currently in QEI. That's infinity. However, the chief equity strategist over at Morgan Stanley put out a big report today in a note to clients entitled, "More is Required." Adam Parker argues that QE3 will likely be insufficient to significantly boost equity markets, and we wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Fed dramatically augment this program, i.e. QE4, before the year's end, particularly if economic and corporate news continue to deteriorate as they have over the past few weeks. Parker goes on to explain his reasoning. At this rate of mortgage-backed securities purchase, and based on prior programs, we see only a weekly 25 basis point expected return for S&P 500 from QE3. While such a return can accumulate over months, it is dwarfed by weekly S&P historical volatility, 2.3% since 1980 and 3% since November of 2008, and can easily be swamped by macro earnings and geopolitical events. This is the main reason we suspect more QE3, which we will call QE4, will be announced by year-end, assuming the EPS trajectory pans out as we suspect. Aside from forming the basis for Parker's QE4 call, the study arrives at seven main conclusions. Number one, for every $10 billion in additional purchases of mortgage-backed securities by the Fed, the S&P 500 was boosted by about 0.25% the following week. Number two, the stock market did better in weeks when the Fed bought more assets. Number three, the stock market did better when the Fed purchased mortgage-backed securities than when the Fed purchased treasuries. Number four, the following week's stock returns were not significantly correlated with the previous week's purchases, suggesting that the effect of QE purchases on stocks is pretty short-lived. Number five, while the effect of QE purchase on stocks is statistically significant, it's not that statistically significant. For the statistically literate, Parker says that T-stats are only in the twos. Number six, there are diminishing returns to asset purchases under quantitative easing programs. And number seven, QE usually benefits growth stocks and junk stocks the most, with healthcare the top sector, and discretionary and telecom stocks as relative underperformers. So just when you thought it couldn't happen, there it goes. And it hasn't happened yet. That's just one really big shot, the chief strategist at Morgan Stanley, who's predicting that's what's coming our way. There was interesting news out on Friday. For those of you who trade with Infinity, you might not have gotten this email. In fact, if you Google for this email, you won't find it directly, or at least I didn't. But if you go to the CFTC website, you will find it. And I bring this about not to cast aspersions on any firm, just simply to help you to be aware if you are an Infinity customer. U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission issued an order filing and settling charges against Infinity, a Chicago-based registered introducing broker, for failing to supervise diligently the handling of certain trading accounts by its officers, employees, and agents. The CFTC order finds that Infinity's officers, employees, and agents ignored warning signs that third-party customer funds were improperly being deposited in a proprietary trading account. The order also finds that an Infinity customer was holding himself out to the public as a commodity trading advisor and trading individual client accounts without being registered with the CFTC or obtaining a power of attorney as required. Additionally, according to the order, Infinity did not have an adequate system of supervision in place. Its compliance manual was outdated. No written policies or procedures were provided to its associated persons, and Infinity did not follow or enforce its compliance procedures. Infinity also did not adequately train its employees, officers, and agents regarding detection of suspicious account activity and fraud prevention. The CFTC order requires Infinity to pay a $300,000 civil monetary penalty, disgorge $40,000 in ill-gotten gains, and cease and desist from violating CFTC regulations as charged. The order also requires Infinity to comply with certain undertakings, including hiring an outside compliance consulting firm to assist in training staff in reviewing and updating its current compliance procedures. This is important because we know what happened with MF Global. We know what happened with PFG Best. And I'm not saying that's what's happening with Infinity. Okay? I'm not saying the firm has gone rogue. I'm saying this could just be, you know, a couple of individuals within the firm. And, I mean, these things do happen. So, again, until there's more information and more news, I'm only making you aware that this situation does exist. And it's not new news, although I had not heard of it until Friday, because the sentence has already been passed. So, I mean, this didn't break Thursday, and then they resolved it Friday. This has been ongoing. We're just now seeing the news come out about it. So there'll probably be more news coming this week regarding the individual who held himself out to be a commodity trading advisor and who wasn't. And additionally, who was at fault? Did he falsify documents, or did Infinity simply fail to vet him and verify those documents? That still remains to be seen. But apparently the CFTC is through with Infinity in regards to this issue. The question is, what will happen to the individual that was involved, or individuals? Now, over the weekend, last night, as a matter of fact. Here, let's get this stuff out of the way. We had a really nice run in soybeans last week. On the Globex open last night, we finally dropped below 16. We got down to 15.93. And so from the tweet on Friday morning, Friday, we got a 45-cent drop, and this was the Globex open last night. We came right down through that target at 16. Now, if you were following us on the Twitter, we walked through that whole thing step by step, moving your stops down and finally hitting the target. I've got something new cooking on beans. If you go to the blog, I talk in depth over the weekend about the bean trades, what happened with them. If you don't know how to get to the blog, just go to the website. On the right-hand side of the page, it will say visit our blog. If you want to see a directory of all the entries, sort of a table of contents, then up at the top, click E-mini Radio Blog. Okay. But just clicking recent posts will take you to Fridays, where we talk in depth about the beans. And there was more to the story on the open last night when the beans came down and took out that final target. So when we closed on Friday, here's what we had. So far that trade had dropped 37 cents, but then on the Sunday night open, once it hit 16, that turned that portion of the trade into a 45-cent trade. Now, that's equivalent to 45 points in the S&P 500. The trade earlier in the week, that one was good for 72 cents. So this ended up being the equivalent of about a 110, 115 cent or dollar move in the S&P 500. Because one penny in the soybeans is equivalent to 1 point in the S&P 500. Someone had emailed me about that this morning. Didn't you mean to say soybeans? And no, I was comparing the beans to the S&P. You know, it's been a long time since we had a 100-point move in the S&P in the course of a week. In fact, we've been doing real good with 10-point, 12-point ranges here of late. Hopefully this week we'll, you know, get up, get out of bed, and get some volatility going. If not, we'll continue to trade in the beans. And if you have any questions, shoot an email to support@cfrn.net. Call Bert toll free, 866-928-3310. And or jump on over to the soybeandaytrader.com. And you'll see all the trades that we've done in the past month to 2 months and some commentary, and you can follow along. All right? With that, Michael, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Duane.
Ready to do the recap?
I am. I am ready to do the recap. Let me... you know what? Can you put your daily results for the ES, that trade you took? You just popped that up there. I'll start it with that, and we'll move on to mine. Just throw your DOM back up there. All right. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, September 24th, 2012. We're going to go through all the trades we took in the live trading room this morning, all the trades we didn't take, and the results of everything. First, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. To sign up, all we need is your name and your email address. We don't ask for any credit card information. With the free trial, you get 5 days in the live trading room. You get all the indicators and the platform and everything that you see here. And you get in the live trading room, we do everything we can to answer all your questions and get you up to speed as quickly as possible so you can start trading with us. You can see here what Duane's results were. He got 15 ticks profit this morning trading the ES. Trading the ES this morning in the live trading room, and now I'm going to move the charts over to my desktop in just a moment. Show screen two. There we go. All right. And now we'll go through my results. I took one ES trade for minus 8 ticks. I took a few gold trades for plus 11 ticks. I took a couple of crude trades for plus 4 ticks. I took one YM trade for minus 8, and I took a couple of NQ and ended at plus 4. So altogether, I guess we ended plus 7 between Duane and myself on the ES, plus 11 on the gold, plus 4 on the crude, plus 4 on the NQ, and minus 8 on the YM. That was our morning results. All right, now let's cover the trades here. All right. The one trade that I took on the ES was right here this morning. Okay. I did not. This pulled up here to test. We'll just call it the yellow line for right now. It's called the DIFFEC, but we'll change it at some point. I'm going to change the name of that thing. It pulled up here and it faded back down into the BBC. At which point I did not go long at the BBC. I waited until it pulled up here again, and it hit the yellow line again, and I shorted it right there for another fade down to the BBC. It went up and down and up and down and up and down. It came back to break even a couple of times. I elected to stay in the trade. It stopped me out right here. Now, right about here, Duane said he wanted to short, and yeah, actually, obviously did short the ES right up here. Okay, he was saying 51.75. He liked shorting right there, and he said he may tell all the partners about... everyone about why he did that in the partners meeting on Thursday. So you have to be a partner to get in there. Anyway, he hit that level and he shorted it down, took some profit. I did not trade the ES again this morning. All right. I took one YM trade right over here. It stopped me out pretty much to the tick and then went up to my profit target. You know, that happens. It was the first pullback down to the BBC. I went long at the BBC. It drew down 9 ticks. I had 8 ticks risk on it. And then it moved up. My entry, I want to say my entry was right in here at 61, I think. And it went up to 73 from there. That was the only trade I took on the YM this morning. Okay. The NQ, let's look at the NQ here. Now, I marked up some trades here on the NQ. I didn't get them all marked up, I guess. Maybe I did. We got the bullish cross and a test to the BBC here. With an up close right there, we had bullish divergence at the time over here. This is a 4-tick range NQ chart. That obviously went up nicely. Pulled back down over here, and it didn't have any opportunity in here. or anywhere in here for that matter. We didn't have the proper divergence. The MA1's on the wrong side of the BBC. I guess right in here, there were a couple of trades that I did miss right in here and over here. Here we had some bullish divergence down here. All right. Bullish divergence is when the green line pulls away from the cycle portion of the slingshot. So we had bullish divergence down there and there. Tested the BBC, gave an up close. Again here, tested the BBC and gave an up close. Each one of those gave 2 points or so, it looks like. There was a momentum opportunity right here on this move down, quarter after 10. I don't know why it moved down so quickly there, but if I remember right, everything started to move down. There was a pullback up, tested the BBC with a down close with the bearish divergence for an opportunity to short right there. Now, when it pulled up over here and it gave the down close, the cycle was headed up too strong against us, so we weren't looking to short right there. All right, as it moved through here, there was another opportunity here. It pulled down, tested the BBC, and gave an up close again with bullish divergence. I'll just use one of these arrows over here. Again, with bullish divergence, I took that long. Once it closed on the other side of the MA1, I moved my stop to break even, and I was taken out of break even right there. It moved up and down and didn't give us any opportunity in here at all. I did take a long trade right here. After it closed up right here, it drew down, and I went long right here with just a couple of ticks risk on it, and it stopped me out at minus a couple of ticks. All right. Then it gave a short indication right here. I did take that one as well. We had the bearish divergence, bearish cross, tested the BBC, down close. I went short, and once it closed under the MA1, I had moved my stop to break even, and it took me out before moving down to my profit target. It did it again right here one more time, right at the end of the morning session, and I did actually short that, and that's what got me to plus 4 ticks on the NQ. Okay? Because I had lost a little bit right here and made it back, and then a few more right there. All right? That was the NQ on the morning. Now, let me grab... Hang on a second. Here we go. Crude oil. No, gold. Sorry, this is gold, not crude. Gold had a few trades this morning. You can see I took a few of them and I missed a few of them. Right here at the open, this was prior to the open. We had some opportunity right there prior to the open. Then it moved up, it came down. There was a momentum trade right in here. For those of you who know what the momentum trades are, there was an opportunity right there for that. It moved around a little bit. It came back here, gave a bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close. We had bullish divergence, and it moved up. And it did it again over here for another move up. Then we had a bearish cross, and it tested the BBC with a down close with bearish divergence. That did move down. I didn't get into that right in there. But I did take a short trade over here. All right, I missed this one in here. Right in here, it pulled back up and tested the BBC with another down close right there with a nice bearish divergence right down here. All right, I ended up missing that one, and I took the next one. And I got a couple of ticks profit out of the next one. All right, then it turned around, came... I shorted up here, and I faded it off of the yellow line here down to the BBC. So I got a few ticks, I think 5 or 6 ticks profit out of that, too. All right, when it came up here and gave a down close off the yellow line, I shorted it right there and took profit down here at the BBC. All right, it went through the BBC and gave an up close with bullish divergence. That was an opportunity to get long, and it moved up nicely off of that. You can see a couple of times it dropped through the BBC here, almost hitting the yellow line, but never actually did. It did actually hit the yellow line right here. I'm not sure why I didn't get into that trade, but I missed it. And it dropped through, gave bearish cross, bearish divergence, pullback test to the BBC with a down close, and I took some profit on that one. And that was pretty much the end of the morning session. You can see it did it a couple more times in here, right in there, with the down close, with the bearish divergence, and once again, right over here, with the down close, with the bearish divergence. Okay. That was the gold for the morning. All right, now let me bring over the crude oil for the morning. Here we go, crude oil for the morning. We took a few trades in crude this morning. The first one that we took right over here, we lost. Then we took a couple of trades. I'm trying to see where we ended up, I think. we lost a small amount on this one over here. I don't think we lost the full 8 ticks on it. No, we didn't lose on that. We profited on that, I think. Anyway, this was the one we made money on. We did lose on that other one. Okay, now I'm back online. All right, so we had... Sorry, I went through all that right there in my head, right in front of you guys. We had a bullish cross here, a pullback down test of the BBC with an up close with the bullish divergence. I took an entry there, and I took some profit on that. Then there was nothing in here, unfortunately, right here. I missed this. We had a pullback up to the BBC, test of the BBC, and a down close. Cycle was going up a little bit. That's probably why I stayed out of that. Over here, we had a bullish cross, and it came all the way down to the yellow line here and tested it. And it gave an up close. It was an opportunity there and another one right there. We had a bearish cross, and it came up here and tested the BBC and gave a down close. I took this short trade right here, and I lost. That's why I ended up where I ended up. Okay. Because I had profit over here, so I was green. Then I took this for a -8 ticks, so I was red a little bit. I missed this next trade right here after the bullish cross, and it tested the BBC and the up close. Now, guys, I'm going to take my time here for just a second. This is a 4-tick range chart. The NQ, the gold, the Russell, soybeans, the 6E, all those things we use on a 4-tick range chart, okay? We even have a 4-tick range chart for the YM and for the ES that you can use if you want to. The trade setups are the same. You look for the bullish cross right here. That means the MA1 crosses over the BBC. The green line is the BBC. You look for that bullish cross. You look for price to come back down, looking for an area of support. Support is provided by the BBC. When it hits that BBC and it closes in the direction of the cross, so it would be an up close, you look to see if you have divergence between this green line and this cycle. If you do have that divergence, then this is a short-term pullback, and you should look for the green line to work its way up into the cycle. Price is going to make it do that. All right. That's the setup. It's the same setup on all the 4-tick range charts. Okay? So in this particular case, there was an opportunity to get long and take the move up. Right here, we had a bearish cross attested to the BBC with a down close, and we had just a tiny bit of bearish divergence down here, but the down close was a spot to get short. All right, it did it again right here. I got long right here, and once it was held in by the MA1, I had moved my stop to break even, and I got out of that trade. It went back and forth a little bit right here. I didn't give a trade in either direction. Then we had a bearish cross and pull back up, tested the BBC with bearish divergence. I took that trade and took some profit. The next one tested the BBC, gave a down close. I took that trade, and when the MA1 looked like it was holding it right here, I took a break even on that. All right. You can see since then it's pulled up here and gave a down close off the yellow line. We didn't really have the divergence there to support that, to support a trade off the BBC. We didn't get the down close or the divergence. Over here, we did have divergence right in here. Okay. And over here, we had divergence on the long side right there. And right here, you see where it pulled right through the BBC and didn't give an up close? It gave an up close off of that line right there. All right. So those were the opportunities in the crude oil this morning. We ended up green a little bit on the crude. Let's see. I didn't trade the Russell, but I'll show you the setups on the Russell. Okay? There weren't as many as there are in all the other places. But let's see. Right here was the first one off the yellow line. We had some bullish divergence, bullish cross. Went right through the BBC, came down here, tapped this, and gave an up close. That was an opportunity to get long. That lasted most of the morning. Then we got a bearish cross, a test of the BBC, and a down close. That was an opportunity to get short right in there. All right. If you got short there, good. If not, there was another one that followed it right over here. Okay. And that was the morning trading. What time is it? 34. I don't think we traded any other markets this morning, so I think I'm going to wrap it up with that. Again, if you guys have not taken a free trial and you want to get into the free trial, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Okay? Hang on, let me see. Are there any questions? Tournament charts, Frank B. And the Globex Open, through New York Open on the 30-minute, 15-minute, and 5-minute. Just like to see what it looks like. Something close. Why do I talk? Do I talk too fast? Bruce H. That is a new indicator that we made available to all the partners in Friday's partners meeting. Okay.
Frank B., you should take a free trial.
we can go over it's actually things. Available to everyone. But we made it. We put it out there in the partners meeting on Friday.
Frank B., you should really come to you should come not
Frank,
to the partners meeting. You should come to... you should take the free trial.
You should. Just sign up for the free trial. You get all the indicators and all that stuff.
So you'll get to play with them yourself and put them on all the different time frames. And there's no obligation, no credit card required.
Yep. I said that. I did. All right. Well, here's a 30-minute, okay, from the going through the Globex, just so you can see what it said. We had a bearish cross up here and a drop down. Went up and it hit the yellow line right here and came off the yellow line pretty hard. That was this morning at about 10:30. Okay, that's the 30-minute. Now, you said 30, 15, and 5, I believe. Here's the 15-minute. Now, about 10:30. Right in here, it came up at the yellow line right there on the 15-minute and fell off of that. What was it 49 down to 46? 3-point drop off of that. That was right about the same time as it dropped this morning. Okay, and it went up off of that. Now let's look at the 5-minute. Here's the 5-minute. Let's try to look in the same period of time. 9, 10, 15. Okay, I think 10:05 to 10:15. This is kind of, I don't know, on the 5-minute, this is at the bottom of the move at 10:15. So it caught the move up on the 5-minute, where the other ones, you know, looking in hindsight, it's hard to tell where they were at that point at, you know, at 10:15 exactly, because one of them's a 30-minute, one of them's a 15-minute. But anyway, this one caught the bottom and moved it up, and it's possible you could have gotten in here. This is 49 down to 46. So this is the move down. So the 5-minute didn't really show the move down. Okay? The other two did. The 5-minute is showing the move up, though, pretty well right here. And I don't remember if the other two showed sort of a bottoming formation. Let's just go look again. Yeah, they showed the BBC on this one. And let's look at the 30-minute quickly. Yeah. Was this at 10:15? Right in here. Yeah, this was it, right in here. It was in this period, right in here. They showed the MA1 on this one. So the BBC and the MA1 on the larger time frames, and the BBC on the smallest time frame. Okay? That was a little slower than normal. Alright, so right in here, what it was suggesting on the 10,000 contract, we had a bearish cross and tested the BBC, so right in here it's suggesting a shorting opportunity. We had bearish divergence. When you see divergence like this, what you anticipate is that the green line is going to work itself into the cycle, and it did that right here. We also just got a pierce of the envelope right here by a green trend strength line. Okay, that suggests a 5 to 6 point move down from this level. And that is that, I believe. All right. Alright, so I'm going to stop the recording here. Once this recap gets out there, Frank, then you'll be able to go and watch it as many times as you want. There. Okay, I shut the recording off. The recap is done. And we can move on. If you would like.
Alright. Did you ever answer Bruce's question?
I did.
Okay.
I don't know if he heard me, but I didn't type it in. I just answered it.
Okay, I got an email from Ben. He came in Friday on two occasions, and we were talking, and we didn't realize he was there. And so I sent him a panelist invitation this weekend. So when he pops in, he should automatically come in with an unmuted mic, I think. However, what we will do is we will, if you can, as long as you're here, if you'll keep an eye on the audio, on the, I'll just open up the staff window. So if he pops in, I should see him come in there, and we can. Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys.
I'll keep an eye on it too.
We are going to go out to beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Which, by the way, thanks to Tony. How do you pronounce his last name? Is it Shu? Because that would be too funny since his company, Zappos, is a shoe store. but Las Vegas, a beautiful city, which is about to become really beautiful and smart, thanks to Tony, the CEO of Zappos, and his own $350 million investment. That really is a big deal. One thing I do want to mention just really quick before we go to Vegas, because we haven't mentioned it in a while, and if you're new to this radio program, you might not be aware of it. And that is the CFRN Partner Equity Program. Okay? Plain and simple, it is a tuition reimbursement program. If you choose to become a CFRN partner, you can have your tuition reimbursed every penny. If you want to know how that works, go to cfrn.net/equity-partner. Okay. There was a press release on that earlier in the year, a lot of excitement, and I was doing some work on the website the other day, and I just realized I haven't brought that up or mentioned it lately. On the show, so some of you who may have been held back by, you know, the cost, at least there is an opportunity there for you to get reimbursed your tuition. We also have some financing options available now to help you out with your education. Three different ones. So if you want more information on that, email support@cfrn.net, or give us a call, 415-857-5654. And if you need help with your charts, your indicators, your data, funding your account, any of that stuff that comes along with a free trial and becoming a partner, Mr. Burton Schlichter is your go-to guy, and you can reach him toll-free, because he's a very important person, at 866-928-3310. One more time, 866-928-3310. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach, and David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good morning, Michael, and good morning, everyone. Hope everyone
morning,
had a
David.
Wonderful weekend. Good morning.
And Robin, good morning to you. Hang on, I'm trying to get your mic open. Hang on there. Where are you at? There you are. Okay, open mic. There you go. Now you got open mic. Good morning, Robin.
I'm hanging on. Good morning, guys. It's a great
Good morning,
day
Robin.
In Las Vegas.
So, David, did you wander downtown this weekend, figure out how you can get in on this Fremont action?
You know, I didn't wander downtown this weekend to figure out how I can get in on the Fremont action, but it's there for the taking. It's probably, a lot of it is gobbled up, but I think there's a lot more to come. It's a boom. It's, you really have to come, you know, for people who are coming to our seminar at in Las Vegas here, Mirage Hotel, you know, that's on the other side of the strip. That's, you know, south, but north on the strip is the Fremont Street Experience, which has a very interesting, neat light show that they have. It's, you know, it's a street that has casinos on either side and various places to eat and stuff. But it's very, very old town. Binion's, you know, you've all heard of Binion's Casino. This is Ted Binion's original, you know, one of the early, early, you know, settlers of downtown Las Vegas, amongst other little hotspots down there. Gangsters, amongst other gangsters. And, you know, we, you go down there and there's a zip line that you can ride on. And it's just, it's a little bit hokey, but it is, downtown is much nicer than it used to be. And then as it extends from that portion out onto the regular road, we now have these new buildings that we talked about last week. Not new buildings, old junk buildings that are now renovated to be restaurants and stuff. And the whole thing, it's like, it literally, because I've lived here forever, and I really cannot believe what I have seen happen downtown. It's like something out of Back to the Future, because forever downtown has looked this one way. It has always looked just like junk. You know, I could use a better word. But to see it, it still looks like junk, but now it's like really hip, edgy junk with these new ideas and things going on downtown. And it's just, a boom is underway. It is right in front of us right now. You don't always get a chance to see something like this happening. Downtown is not a really big place, and so it's all contained within a certain area. And boy, it's really getting interesting. I am going to spend some more time down there. If those of you who have been to Las Vegas in the past and remember downtown, you're coming to Las Vegas at any point, you would, you know, it'd be fun for you to go downtown and see what changes are really taking place. It's pretty remarkable. It really is all happening in one block. So it's not the biggest thing, but the fact is there's going to be other things coming in the second block from the Fremont Street Experience. And God knows how many blocks it'll continue on
I
for.
I can be your tour guide.
Robin will be your tour guide.
If I can make you a list of things you could see, or I could be your tour guide if you want to come. If you want me to go with you.
I ate at a restaurant down there that was a Thai food restaurant. Really good Thai food, and again, just very cool and hip and edgy, but really old and broken down at the same time. You know how that is. It can look. I would have to use bad language to express it the way I really need to, but you get the idea, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what's the theme. They always have a theme on the light show. It's the largest LED light show in existence, like an arch dome that runs the whole street and goes on at night. And I think it goes every
hour or something.
15 or 20 minutes.
15 minutes, yeah. It's something else.
Spectacular. It's spectacular.
Yeah, it is. They've really done well. And this has all been under, a lot of it was under Oscar Goodman, who was mayor of Las Vegas. And he had a few little run-ins with Mr. Obama himself early on in Obama's presidency, because Obama was making cracks about, now don't go out to Las Vegas and have your convention there. You know, don't be spending so much money because the economy's crashing. And he was using Vegas as a, you know, what's the word, a euphemism for,
whipping,
you know, throwing
post.
Your money away.
Yeah.
For what? Yeah. And, you know, Oscar asked him once to not do it, and he did it two more times. And Oscar said to him, you're not welcome here. You know, if you're going to get up there and if you're going to trash the city and hurt our economy with your silly comments, you're not welcome here.
Yeah.
You know, I love that about Oscar Goodman. He doesn't care.
No, he shoots from the hip.
He will tell you what he thinks, and that's I adore that quality in him, that he breaks through the political stuff. He wasn't going to kowtow to him. And Obama landed, and he wanted the mayor. I think at one point, I mean, somebody will have to correct me if I'm wrong, but he came into town, and normally the mayor, of course, is going to be there. Well, the mayor wasn't there to meet him because he had dissed us. Or the town so many times with his silly comments about, you know, don't go to Vegas or, you know,
whatever.
He doesn't get impressed by much, but if you trash, he's very, very pro Las Vegas. Oh. I mean, I never saw anybody that was so gung-ho, you know, yeah, about the city. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's quite a few people that have been in the city for a long time.
That have done the city a lot of good, yeah.
That have done the city a lot of good, but are just really, really strong about, you know, preserving Las Vegas in a good image. And it's a big little town, you know. It's it's really a very little town, so to speak.
It is.
It's a big little town. With horses and burros and Red Rock Canyon and Red Rock Search and Rescue.
And hookers and pimps and stretch limos.
Well, wait a minute, Dwayne. It actually, that has really gone down quite a bit.
Yes.
I have to tell you, you're painting an older picture there.
Yeah.
Well, they've all gone inside. It's gone very upscale. But, I mean, the porno on the streets is ankle deep. I mean.
They've cut that back as well. When's the last time you were here?
When I was
You're talking
there,
about the people that hand out the little cards and stuff.
When I was there to see you last spring, it was just laying everywhere on the ground. On the street.
Yeah, it's not nearly as bad as that now. There has been a whole bunch of changes in city regulations that have cut that back, and I think you'll find that's what it is. I mean, it's unfortunate because this is, you know, the town is known as Sin City, but people don't want to see that stuff. There's places you can go to get it, and you don't have to have people handing it out to you.
There's a misperception that prostitution is legal in Vegas. It is not legal in Vegas.
It's not legal here.
And there is a misperception, and you can end up in jail.
It's true. It's only in those certain areas of the state.
Outlying. Yeah. Pahrump is an example, out in Nye County.
The Chicken
Ranch. But not in Clark County. It's not legal in Clark County, so she's true. It's true. The myth of the, you know, prostitutes hanging out on the corner and all that stuff. And by the way, where a lot of that used to happen was in the boom part of Las Vegas now, the downtown part of Las Vegas. That's where it used to be, and they have dramatically less amount of that now because those parts are now being run by legitimate real businesses that have real things that they're doing. And so it really has fallen off quite a bit. That era has kind of gone
off
the streets.
Good. And there's a lot of history down there. I mean, there's a whole different feel to the old casino to a new one. You know, if you go into the Cosmopolitan, it's very she-she and it's very glamorous and it's over the top. You go to, you know, the Golden Nugget. The Golden Nugget's pretty cool because they have a pool, and in the pool, there's a second floor to the pool, and if you're sitting on the first floor at a bar, you can look into a tank, and it's a fish tank, but they call it the shark tank. And if you go to the pool, you can actually go to the second floor and go through a tube that brings you through the shark tank. And if you're sitting down at the bar, it's really pretty funny to see people go through the shark tank through this tube. I don't know if you've ever seen that, David, but you really should see it.
Yeah, I have seen it.
It's pretty neat. So there's a lot of interesting things down there, but you get the feel of the old Las Vegas, and you don't have to walk miles. You can go in and out of one to another. There's fabulous vendors, and you can actually win on some of the slots because some of them are a little bit loose down there. They want you to play there, so the slots can be a little bit looser than the strip, the main strip.
Something that I had forgotten about, I had seen it many, many years ago, and for those of you who are coming to Las Vegas, this would be interesting for you to take a look at. You know, we still have sunny days right now, and it's becoming, obviously, we're in fall now, but for some of these hotels, the pools will stay open through fall for people who want to lay out in a less, you know, heated environment and et cetera. Well, one of the really most amazing little setup of pools that we have, believe it or not, is at the old Flamingo Hotel on Las Vegas Boulevard. Just the Flamingo Hotel. Not the Flamingo Hilton, but just the regular on the Las Vegas Strip Flamingo Hotel. They have a really remarkable backyard, so to speak, where the pools go on forever and just a really interesting, they've got live, cranes and other things walking around, birds of every different type, It's very interesting, and it was really nicely done.
Peacocks?
Yeah, peacocks. They have the pink, what are the pink birds? Pink flamingos. Yeah, they have flamingos, real live flamingos walking around back there. It's the most amazing thing to see. Yeah.
Hey, guys, we have a special guest joining us for just a few minutes today.
Yay.
And Ben, are you there?
We do have 10 seconds now until they ring the bell here. This is the opening bell here, ladies and gentlemen. Our early indication this morning, 12:06.
There he is, Ben from TradersAudio.com. How are you, Ben? Long time.
Real good, Dwayne. How are you?
Good, man. Good. I know.
Robin Dane I hear in the background there?
Hey, Ben.
Robin?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Small world, Ben.
How are you guys doing?
Getting smaller.
Good. How are you doing?
Very good. Very quiet day today so far.
Oh, well, there's something unusual. How quiet has it been?
The volatility index has gone below that 15 level or 16, depending on how you look at it. It's been very quiet. All over, though, for the most part, across the board. There's a lot of info this week, a lot of data scheduled for release, so a lot of traders are kind of hopeful that we'll see some energy in the market. But, you know, I'm not sure how much you guys have been watching some of this divergent type activity that's been occurring. And, you know, Apple just seems to be like a world of its own for the most part. And you know, even today we had real strength up back into Friday's range around that 51, even 5170 level, which is the high 5170, but the NASDAQ was lagging. And, you know, we were seeing a lot of strength in the Russell, but without confirmation from all of the majors and without that participation from all the majors, we basically just lose energy, you lose follow-through, you lose conviction. I mean, that divergent-type activity has been extremely powerful. And for the most part, it's been, you know, it's all attributable to the you know, all eyes on Apple-type mentality. And
Apple's so down $10 today.
Say it again.
Apple is down $10 today.
Yeah, and so the NASDAQ's been lagging a bit.
Google, on the other hand, hit an all-time high today.
Yeah, which I think is contributing to the bid in the Russell. So, but Dwayne, I think that sums it up. I actually have to be a little bit short today. I'd love to come back a little bit later on in the week if you guys have time. But
yeah, the link I sent you. The link I sent you is good for the whole week.
Okay. Say it again.
The link I sent you is good for the entire week.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Dwayne, you summed it up right there in a very short amount of time, and it's the two divergent type participating markets. You know that again, as I said, you lose energy, follow through, and conviction until that resolution does resolve itself, or that divergence resolves itself. And unfortunately, we don't know which way it's going to resolve itself, but we always know it's going to. And so you kind of just sit back and have to wait. And I think that's what's happening right now. There's a lot of mixed activity, a lot of mixed signals out there. And I don't know if it's so much that, you know, everybody uses the money's on the sidelines right now. But I think it's just that money's really confused right now. We're heading into the election. I mean, on the broader, you know, scope of things, it's way confusing. And then we just kind of broke down the micro a little bit, you know, and in terms of some of that, you know, intermarket, intraday divergent type activity. But really, right now, in my opinion, it comes down to the dollar. The dollar's chopping her up around mid 79 even. If you know, 79.50, it's below that right now, 79.30 or something. I think if we were to see that dollar, you know, get bid, then, you know, it's basically all eyes are on the dollar, it seems like.
All right. You know, Morgan Stanley this morning, their chief strategist came out with a report that predicts QE4 by the end of the year, which seems crazy because we had QE1, QE2, and then QEI, which was infinity. And I don't know how much more. There weren't any firm details in the Morgan Stanley report that I saw. Clients may have gotten a different report, but I don't know what more they can do. Now, when they announced that, Ben, were you guys expecting some heavy volatility on the floor?
Sure. I mean, that was announced in the last Fed meeting at the 11:15 time frame, I think it was. And, Leading into that, we were kind of looking for some volatility. You know, we were looking for some sort of, it had been going on for months leading into that, ahead of the Jackson Hole, out of Jackson Hole, into the Fed announcement. So yes, there were a lot of participants for months who had been looking for that stimulus announcement, and basically the bulls got it, you know. But again, if you look at the chart since, we've basically been sideways for the last 8 days, which for the most part has been sideways since then. You know, if you remember, it was the strong run-up on Friday or Thursday in the day, a little continuation on Friday morning, pulled back a little bit during the day on Friday, and since then, and that's basically the range. You know, that's the balance up at this upper extreme right now. So they were expecting it earlier, had been just waiting and waiting and waiting, finally got it, and now it's basically sideways while they interpret the data or, you know, kind of get the price models so we're ready for the next move.
Ben, this is David. Do you remember the good old days when the market used to actually move intraday from one very
sure.
important level to another very important level?
Sure.
Weren't you a lot younger at that time?
We're not talking about that long ago. You know, most recently we saw that, not this most recent summer, but the summer before, we saw that with the economic crisis that we were dealing with when they were debate about the debt ceiling, et cetera,
yep.
et cetera.
You got a good memory. That's good. That's true.
That's the most recent
that.
Time. And we saw good volatility, good market movement intraday, but yeah, it's changed. And
it
I'd have to kind of chalk it up to high frequency, but there's also this element which has been at play. And, Dwayne, we were talking about it a lot last time I was coming on a fairly frequent basis that we're talking about again. And it just got extended, if anything, by the most recent Fed comments, is that there's no speculation right now in terms of interest rates. Everybody assumes they're just flat. And so that's what's going to generate that type of activity that you just mentioned. Again, it's going to be speculation associated with interest rate activity. Right now there is none. So we're extremely low volatility. I mean, we've
yeah.
been here before. You know, we'll climb our way out of this. I don't know when. It could last 5 years. I don't know. It could last five more minutes. You know, I don't really know. But yes, the market, you know, I hate to do this, kind of quote unquote has changed, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
oh, it does. It does change.
Yes, it does. And that's a component of multiple contributing factors. One of them being low volatility. Another being high frequency trading. You know, so
yeah. Well, I think that's interesting that you mentioned that, because just as you were saying that, I was remembering the connection between us having years ago the conversation that the Fed interest rate announcement doesn't have anywhere near or any effect at all
yeah.
in many cases, apparently. And since that has gone, I think I would agree very much with you that that is
yeah.
probably a very big part of why we don't see intraday swings. Interesting.
Yeah.
So
well, let's hope it changes soon.
Ben, tell us real quick about your new product
go ahead.
You got. You got a new product on the bonds, is that right?
Yeah, we're doing the a broadcast out of the 30-year. It's a 30-year, 10-year coverage. We also are doing a broadcast out of the grains, and we recently launched a Forex channel. So we've got a few markets that we're rolling out right now. We just launched an app, so people can download an app to their iPhone and oh, my gosh, I swear, is CNBC an infomercial for Apple right now or what? I don't know if
yeah.
Apple's paying them or what's going on, but it literally, I don't know if I've seen one story other than Apple today.
Yeah.
And
they're starting to turn on them a little bit, though, because, you know, the
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I was telling my friend, we ride every Sunday together, and I told him yesterday, I said, I'm too much hype right now. I really feel it. I feel like we'll see 400 before 1,100. So...
Well, sales
or 400 before 1,000.
Sales were disappointing. The first 24 hours
yeah.
after the release of the iPhone 5, they were stunning, double what it was for the iPhone 4S. But now that we've gotten the first weekend under our belt, only 5 million sold, and analysts were predicting 7 to 10 million would be sold by this point.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah, Apple could be in for a nice pullback here. It's overdue,
yeah,
to say the least.
Yeah. Well, again, I think of it, I sort of just look at it as this overall perspective, and I sort of think, you know, after a while, everybody just kind of gets exhausted with all the hubbub or the you know, kind of, hype. And don't get me wrong, I love Apple as a company. They've made buying music easier than ever before. And in many ways. And the kids love it, and the younger generation loves it. But is it, you know, is it the, you know, is it what it's made out to be? I'm not sure. Only time will tell, but certainly innovative. But I just feel like it's been overly hyped up at this point. So let me run, guys. I really appreciate it big time. Robin, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm listening to you.
So good to hear your voice back there, Robin. And for the record, guys, Robin, everybody, all four of you guys included, myself included, a good friend of mine once told me a long, long time ago about the markets and about people in the markets. He always said, good people attract good people in this business. And the rest just kind of let them spin the wheels and do the thing. But to hear Robin's voice and Dwayne and all you guys talking together, I was like, oh, it's just so true. It's proof positive over and over again that good people attract good people in this business. So let's just keep working real hard.
That's nice.
Thank you, Ben.
You guys are the best. Yeah. Thanks again.
Love you.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. There he is, guys. The voice of the pits. Phantom of the Opera. Ben Lichtenstein. Go visit him. Or Lichtenstein, however you say it. Go visit him at tradersaudio.com. Take a free trial. He got a number of different products, a couple new products. He even got an iPhone app. So check that out as well. Okay,
you know,
where were we?
He will actually, you know, if you put in a special request and say you came from CFRN, if you felt like you wanted to go to Chicago to go down to the floor, he would help you to get in there and just see what it's like. If you've never seen it and you're in that area, you should really check it out. It's really fabulous. It's changed certainly a lot from the old days, but it's still very exciting to see. And I always get revitalized every time I go to Chicago and see him and go to the floor. It's just awesome, and he's a really great guy.
I bet he would even let you wear his colorful jacket for a few minutes.
You got to do it off the floor. Can't do it on the floor.
Oh, okay.
I went through that, and they made me go outside. Yeah, it's like a big no-no to do it on the floor.
Okay. All right, well, Apple is now down $14.50, 2% on the day. Been a long time since we've said that. And the Foxconn riots have shut the factory down. So this is going to get interesting. For those who don't know, Foxconn is one of the big factories in China that employs like a quadrillion people. And they say they've had enough. They're rioting, and the factory has been closed. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
So that means that stops the production of the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, in America, you know, workers can strike and all that, and it's accepted, and it hasn't always been that way in America, but it certainly is now. you don't do this in China.
No.
I mean, now, they're on a world stage, and because it is Foxconn, and because it is Apple, all the world's media will be on top of this situation, but just by and large in China, you don't riot, you don't go on strike, you don't complain about your job because there's 100 million people standing behind you waiting to take that job. Or however many people there is in that line. I lost count. There's a lot of people. So, yeah, you know what I mean. So this is
absolutely.
This is unusual. This is kind of a historic first. And we'll see where it leads over the next couple of days and how they put it to rest and how they get back. Because, again, there's no shortage of people to take the jobs, but in order to train them, to get them up to speed. There was an article over the weekend, I'm pretty sure, in fact, I know I did, I tweeted it. So if you guys go check the Twitter feed, there's an article from a Chinese guy that he was with one of the local media newspapers there. He got embedded at Foxconn. In other words, he went, applied for a job, got hired, and he sat the assembly line for like 2-3 days until he just literally couldn't take it anymore. And he bailed and wrote his story. And so I don't know if him breaking that story, which is also a bit of a no-no, has anything at all to do with the riot or not. I don't know if the two are connected. But if you check the Twitter feed, you can find the actual article that the guy from China, who worked in the factory, wrote. And apparently, most of everything that we've heard, according to him, is true. I mean, they're not beating you with a whip, and they're not poking you with a cattle prod, but they're riding you pretty hard. They expect a lot from you, and the work itself, while it's not heavy lifting or digging a ditch, it is grueling in that it is the same repetitive thing over. I think each shift he had to make some kind of little marks on the backside of the iPhone 5 of the case. That was just his job in the assembly line. And I think in one shift he would mark 3,000 of them or something. And so he just talked about how grueling that was to sit there in that one position and do that same repetitive motion again and again. And the guys were standing behind him screaming, you know, go faster, go faster, go faster. So, anyway.
Dwayne, you are breaking up a little bit. Robin, are you hearing that or no?
Yeah, just a touch.
I keep hearing a What's clicking that? In and out, like somebody's putting it on mute, taking it off mute.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, I'm getting.
I don't know what that is, but yeah, and I don't know if my voice is breaking up or not to you.
No, it's in, that's.
But I'm
okay.
Hearing.
No, all I hear is the. It's I'm like hearing. Somebody picked up a phone and then hung it up. Picked up a phone and then hung it up. That's what I'm hearing.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what that is. But anyway.
Was it there before
Ben
it's
interesting.
Came on?
With. I'm sorry.
Was it there before Ben came on?
No, it was breaking up a little bit when he was on for me.
My question is, was there an audio problem prior to Ben coming on? That's my question.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit, but I'm not 100% sure, Dwayne, but it sure is. It's pretty busy now on you, the in and out on the voice. So just letting you know.
All right, I'll let you and Robin
know. Maybe it'll clear up here. Yeah, well, let's see. Let me think of what else we were going to mention. The Apple iPhone, it's for sale now. People are buying it, maybe not as many as they'd hope, but it'll probably still do very well. But it is interesting that without that factory, and perhaps that's the main place where they build them, that could really cause them some grief here. So we'll see. I do remember there was an article and some information, and Dwayne had either read about this, or I don't remember. You said something about it, Dwayne, at some point, but it had to do with Steve Jobs telling our current administration and the president that he wasn't going to employ all these people here to build the iPhone because there wasn't enough either skilled labor or I don't know what it was, but he ended up going to China. It obviously is a lot less expensive to build them there than it would be here, so I'm assuming that might be part of the reason. But he did have a discussion with the president about his policies towards business, and we've heard quite a bit about businessmen complaining about the policies of this administration, and that's why business is not really ramping up. Well, when you have the guy who runs the largest company in the world, the most valuable company, not the most valuable tech company, the most valuable company on the planet, coming to you and complaining about your business policies, this administration did not change their business policies, and Steve Jobs ended up giving this work, tens of thousands of jobs, to the people in China. So another interesting piece of information along the way that really nothing changes the mind of this administration. They have it right. They know it best. Even when the biggest businessman on the planet comes to them and says, for America, we're going to have to move these people somewhere else because unless you're willing to change your business policies and your regulatory policies, and they didn't make those changes. And as I understand it, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that's how Steve Jobs ended up in China with these workers. So, is that the case, Dwayne?
That is.
Yeah.
That is.
So interesting. Just another thing. And let's see. Well, we could get right to the markets, I suppose. I could go on and on, but you already know that.
Yes.
So we'll just move on to the markets here. Well, you know, Ben made a couple of interesting points, something I had not really made that connection directly made the connection to the idea that when the volatility left the bond announcement, when the Fed would do their Fed announcement and the volatility went away, that was around the time that the volatility really ended and brought us to the kind of markets that we have today, which are very, very quiet markets that might make an initial move, go sideways for many, many hours, and perhaps, in some cases, finish with a move. So really very, very quiet behavior. It may have even been before, but I'm talking about the interest rate announcement that he talked about and how the volatility, people aren't speculating on the interest rates. That's what his point was. And that's really interesting. I don't know if it's just me, but I found that interesting that because people aren't speculating on the interest rates, there's a lot of complacency there, that has taken a lot of the volatility out of the S&P. For some reason, and I have trouble with time in my personal life, like remembering exactly what events were around what time. You know, sometimes people go, no, that was the first half of spring, you know, 2006. You know, I remember it exactly because I'm not that guy. But it seems to me that even though I love that comment, and I think that was very interesting, it's insightful, it seems to me that it may have even been prior to then that we had been complaining about the old days and the volatility. But either way, maybe it was right around that time. So maybe somebody can help us. When the intraday volatility went away and you started hearing about more people moving over to, as an example, the interest rate, currencies, foreign currencies, currency market trading, they started moving over there because the volatility had left the S&P. So, and look at us today. You know, we've had a nice little beginning move up. A start with a move down, then a nice move up, and then now the market's just gone very, very quiet here, almost at a standstill. Almost at a standstill here. So we're just going to have to wait here a little bit for something to happen because it ain't happening right now. Anyway.
Once there's a little bit of either some announcements or we have the debates kick in on the first debate is? October 3rd, I think that's when we'll start seeing some real activity. I know for sure that the clients that I have in Connecticut at the hedge funds are so antsy for the market to move. They are just chomping at the bit here. So they're really, really ready to go, but there's nothing happening. So they're all kind of waiting, and there's a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of cash, Robin, sitting on the sidelines in business. There's a lot of cash sitting on sidelines in finance. There's a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. There's a lot of cash in the banks that they're not loaning from what Dwayne talked about. I mean, there's just a lot of money waiting to be used, and the red light has not turned to green because people are not comfortable with the policies and the uncertainty. And perhaps after the election, the uncertainty that stopped businesses from investing in a big way over the last several years has not been due to the upcoming election. That had to do with directly with the policies. Now perhaps people are waiting to see what happens here with and Mitt Romney did release some tax returns, which showed that he paid, I forgot what the average was, but he might have averaged near 20% over the last X number of years, a summary of it all. And that just in 2011, he paid more money in millions of dollars to charity than he did in his actual income tax. In other words, whatever income tax he paid, he scrupulously followed the law and he paid it, whatever he was owing on. And then he gave away more than that in charity, which I would challenge the Harry Reids, people that were challenging him to, show his tax returns and claiming completely fraudulently that he hadn't paid any income tax. I wonder if Harry Reid's going to get up and apologize now that he's got a summary of 20 years worth. And of course, instead of saying, we didn't get it right, they're going to say, well, now we need to see more before you're going to get an apology. And they're just going to make the whole thing about tax returns. So,
aren't you just tired of all the negative publicity I'm just so sick of the negative ads for it's for everybody, not just the president.
No, I know.
But
it's
I'm just so fed up. It's like, please, I can't take it anymore. I'm tuning them out. What are they? I don't understand that they think that that's going to be helpful. Or what they're doing is they're just trying to create doubt in somebody's mind. This one's, doing something illegally. This one has a friend who was in jail. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right. Whatever happened to proving how good you are by doing a really good job and letting that stand on its own rather than trying to find and dig up dirt. But that doesn't work. It's gotten too heated and too... I know.
Now, he did do a 60... Romney did a 60-minute interview where he actually talked about some of the tax changes. And they were actually very good. They were very good.
He wants to lower tax rates. He wants to limit deductions and exemptions for the wealthy.
Yep.
Get that. He wants to eliminate taxes, I think, on interest, dividends, and capital gains for the middle class. That's huge.
Yeah, it's
think about
really big.
Taxes, you're going to eliminate taxes on your interest, dividends, and capital gains for the middle class. That just wipes out a whole chunk that they won't have to pay. I think he said higher benefits for lower income people and lower benefits for higher income people. That's a lot of stuff. He didn't go into the details, but that's at least that breaks some of the mold that he's just there to, help the rich, that kind of thing. And I just want to say for the record again, I've never seen any of the middle class or the poor at any of Obama's parties. So I'm still waiting to see that since he says he's for those people so much. I don't see him befriending any of those people.
Yeah.
But that be that as it may. Okay, so you want to get onto the S&P because there's not a lot happening in the S&P.
Well, why don't you go through the the charts and things, and I'd like to talk about pain and pleasure later.
Okay, well, I'll be brief here. Yeah.
Give me a couple minutes, and I'm sure you'll chime in.
Oh, I will. You can chime in whenever you want. And Dwayne, of course, as well. Okay, so for the S&P, I don't have a lot to add. Going back in time just a little bit, before we had switched over contracts into the December contract, when the market was down at the September 5th all the way through August 31st to September 4th, 5th, we've been talking about the market, the very, very high likelihood that the market would run to 1475 basis the September contract. In a very fast, 6 or 7 day move, the market ran right to 1475 based on the September contract. Those of you who are coming to the Reflected Wave seminar on March 6th and 7th will see exactly how we made that call. And how you can make it the next time. 75-point move.
Did you say March?
No, that was the September contract that we just rolled.
No, you just said coming to the March seminar.
I'm sorry, the October 6th and 7th seminar.
I just don't want people to get the wrong plane tickets.
No, that's right. The October 6th and 7th Reflected Wave seminar. You'll see how we made the call for the market to move from 1400 to 1475, which we made live on the radio here. It's a 75-point move. It's a big move. And it did it to the tick. I mean, it came within one tick of it. That's based on a reflected wave principle that you will be able to replicate yourself on all kinds of different markets, et cetera. So I hope you're excited about that. I'm excited about showing it. Anyway, so from the point that they made that high, which was on September 14th, the market has subsequently... continue to react off that. I think we're in our sixth day below that level. Normally, we would get a reaction off of a completion, and then we still do expect higher prices. This isn't an outright forecast or a roadmap, but it is what we would expect. We would expect a good, decent reaction, if we can go further than this. But in the end, we expect higher prices, including a test or attempt potentially at 1515 later after this reaction is over. And we'll have more to say about that when the market, when the volatility picks up some and allows us to be able to say that the market's acting, really very normally here, which, it is normal, but it's normal in a weird way. It's like somebody saying, I've been sick for a year, but I feel pretty normal. Well, that's relative to being sick. I mean, I feel normally like I normally do, which is not that well. You don't feel fully well. Well, that's kind of how the market is. It's in a very strong position, but it's not doing a lot of movement. And so we'll wait and see how things work out, maybe we'll get a little bit more volatility. One thing I do want to say is that we're inching in now on a point where if tomorrow or September 26th, somewhere around, you know, early part of this week, early mid part of this week, if we were to make a little bit lower low into, say, tomorrow, that's not a forecast for that to happen, but just if we were, that would set things up for us to do something with the S&P potentially on the long side. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about that as we get a little closer to that. And I might even we might even have something with regard to that today later. But let's let them put this in and continue moving, because there's not a lot of, you know, speed and volatility here. So we'll just let them move there. Then if you want, we can switch over to gold, which we've talked about a weekly top occurring in gold. This, you know, this is an area that we talked about us getting out of some of our longer-term gold position, primarily because we felt an important enough move had happened since the breakout above the 1625 level all the way up to 1786. That's 150 points. It's a pretty good move. And so we're waiting to see how this continues, but we did exit some of our positions, and we'll, if the market does go down, which we normally would expect it to do, we'd expect a multi-week sideways to lower movement, and we'll show this at the Reflected Wave seminar as well, the reason why the week of September 17th would be a top for gold, in spite of the very big run-up, and it is frightening to step in front of something like that. But for us, since we were in already, we just wanted to exit something. I do expect a multi-week sideways to lower movement to continue. Would I short this for that? I'm not so sure that I would do that. But I would take positions off that I was already long from, and that's what we did. So we'll see how this plays out over the next several weeks. But that's what we're kind of looking for right now in the S&P, excuse me, in the gold market. Don't have a lot. We've talked. Somebody asked us about Yahoo, and I'm watching Yahoo, and it trades a little bit unusually. It has a couple things that it does that are interesting, nothing bad. We'll watch this for a little while longer, and I'll mention anything because I know some of the people are following this. We had talked about Facebook having resistance on or at the level of $23.19. On September 19th, they closed above 23.19 by closing at 23.29, but both days subsequent to that, they were not able to close above that. And we said that it could be considered selling territory or a short position, but wasn't a real trade we gave out. But they sure whacked them good on the downside today, and they've really declined sharply, down $2.10 right now off of this you know, the 23.19 resistance. So we'll continue to watch that. And I don't know if, Dwayne, if you have any information that's new on Facebook that would be tied in with today's news or anything like that, or anything you want to discuss about it.
No, nothing new.
Okay.
Nothing new at all on Facebook other than...
Yeah, sizable move, though, for the move down without the news.
There may have, if there was any material news, anything, I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the markets often make large moves without necessarily having news. The crash of 87 was one really big example of that. There was no news. And all of the excuses that they've come up with, and I say excuse because they don't know. There was a presidential commission on the crash in 1987. And there's a whole, you can go to the library or get it on the internet and read that whole thing. The smartest minds are trying to find out what it is that caused that crash. And, of course, many of the things that they were pointing to at the time, one big one was program trading. That was the big bad word. We have more program trading now by orders of magnitude than we ever did back in 1987. Good Lord. You know, we have program trading through the roof. And so it's highly questionable whether that was the cause of the crash either. Sometimes the market... has merely technical things it needs to complete, and sometimes that's not in concert with the news cycle. And so sometimes the market just needs to go do those things. It has to go up or down and whatever. And I believe the crash of 87 was a highly unusual example of a technical move that the market needed to do, as bizarre as this may sound to some, that wasn't really connected, and somehow it got to be that big, you know, that size, that time frame, was somehow not connected to any news cycle, and the market needed to do a technical thing. If you believe in the technical aspect of the market, technical meaning that the market has a nature and that the market needs to make certain types of movements in order to satisfy and express that nature, in spite of news and or because of news, because the news in most cases runs with the technical side of the market. That's why news and big market moves run together. Ordinarily, a person would say, well, yeah, the market's down real big, you know, on such day, or up real big because so-and-so came out with this news. And that's how most people think. But people who are technically minded and have been around markets for, in some cases, a long, long time, have picked up the other side. I actually believe that the author, Mikkel, can't think of his last name, that wrote the Random Walk Down Wall Street.
Right.
I believe that I detected in him on that day, and I don't want to read too much into it because I didn't spend a lot of time. We all didn't spend a lot of time with him. It was very nice of him to come on. But I believe he's turning the corner on many of his very, very hardline stances that he published in earlier works, the classic Random Walk Down Wall Street, and that he himself cannot deny to himself that he has seen, now that he's studied the market even more and more evidence that would have him questioning his original thesis that one price bar has no connection to any previous price bar, that today's movement has no connection to yesterday's, that the market has no memory, that if it went to an old low, it, you know, and all and on and on and on. I think he may be questioning that as well. You know, the technical side of the market exists as far as we're concerned. You know, forgive the sales or the whatever you want to call it, but, you know, when we originally in April were calling for the big move down in crude, there was nothing but bullish news in crude. So the technicals meant that the market needed to go down and touch $88, and the market was at 103 and 106. Then news came out, and a person could say, well, the news, yeah, the bad news, Saudi said this, whatever, and then the market went down and did the deed. But the news and the movement of the market, we couldn't predict the news, but the technicals of the market led it down, and the news came along to be, quote-unquote, the cause. So things really are different when viewed at different levels. From one level, something might be completely impossible to know the future of, but when seen from another level, it can be very clear, or much clearer anyway. So it's a matter of levels, almost like a man standing in a field can only see so far, but if he was standing on a little bit of a mountain, he could see much further. So what was impossible at one level is suddenly possible at another level. So the technicals in Facebook today may have required it. I don't have all kinds of stuff set up on it for myself, but a move down like this without any real news, because it's a sizable move. We're down $2.10.
Paul commented that there was an article which I sent out to everyone that follows us on Twitter. Barron's, one of their writers, came out with a $15 price target. Now, this is an editorial column. This guy is not an analyst. It's just his opinion that a fair price would be $15. So it's hard to contribute the move down to his opinion. Although Barron's is very widely read and very widely respected. So could it carry some weight? Could it pressure the stock to the downside? Yeah, I suppose it could. My only point was that I don't know of any material thing happened.
Other than that,
You know, like an analyst downgrade or, you know, some earnings or anything that normally would move the stock. So this guy that writes for Barron's, he may hold a lot of sway. And and plus, as we inch in on the next lockup period expiring, you know, people realize there's a big block of stock that's going to hit the market. In October, there's going to be, in one day, over 2 billion shares are going to get freed up.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's a lot. There's a lot of stocks out there that don't even have a billion shares. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would venture to say probably the vast majority of the stock universe. Now, I don't know if vast majority,
Yeah, but you get your point.
Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but a billion, I mean, that's a Carl Sagan stock. Billions and billions.
You have to say
shares.
It correctly.
I don't know how to say
billion.
It.
Billions and billions, something like that. I can't do it either. Okay, so we'll move on quickly here. Let's get through this. We went to Yahoo. The bond market, we talked about September 17th being a bottom in the bond market on the daily chart for multi-day advance. We're still inside that. They're still attempting to move up. So we're getting a nice bounce in the bond market, which is nice to see. And would like to see more of that to keep interest rates low for a while longer, to let everybody have an opportunity to take advantage in some way, shape, or form of where we are in interest rates, whether that's financing a new house or whatever. The interest rate makes a dramatic, in practically unfathomable difference. I mean, the difference between getting a 30-year interest rate at 3.5% and getting one at 7% is just insane amounts of money that you would not have to pay out or have to pay out, depending on which side of the deal you're on. So keep that in mind. It adds up. And people can make your payment be anything they might want to with some slick deal, but the fact is that you're paying more out to own that house over time than you would with just 4 points less of interest. That's a big difference. And those kinds of interest rates are available right now for home loan if you qualify. We talked about that last week. Dwayne was talking about the bank's situations, and I was questioning, there's a lot of homes that have been financed. Now, that's not everything. I mean, homes are one part of it. There's been the real estate market has rebounded. The builders have had nationwide, I think one of the biggest, whatever the number was, they've had a really big rebound in new home building and new home sales. So someone's buying those homes. Someone is going to a bank and getting those kinds of loans. The bank is loaning on a something that they can, an asset. And that's what banks normally do, is they normally, even if you are looking for a business loan, in most cases, banks don't loan money, or if they do, you have to have really good credit and like Dwayne said, not need the money to get them to give you money for an idea. What banks want to do is they don't want to loan you money on an idea. They want to loan money against something. That's the business that banks are in, is to loan money against a piece of equipment,
right,
a building, a house, receivables. That's what banks do. And they aren't doing it as much as they used to, but they still are doing it because a lot of the whole comeback from GM, the record year that they had, GM, Chrysler, Ford, all those cars got sold through bank loans. The vast majority of all those new cars are sold through bank loans. So banks are lending, but they're much less likely going to lend on anything right now unless you, first of all, yes, you do have to have the credit, but secondarily, the example, Dwayne, that you had given about a businessman with an idea, et cetera, generally speaking, I'm not sure that banks do a lot of that. That's almost sounded to me more like venture capital about an idea. That's why venture capitalists are there, is because banks want to have something. They want to have an asset.
The backbone of America is banks making small business loans. Small businessmen don't have access to venture capitalists.
Right, but they don't loan money to people on an idea. What they loan money is on equipment. They loan money on assets. That's the vast majority of bank loans, Dwayne, are with something backing the loan up, like an asset.
Well,
you don't even have to own the asset. You can go to the bank and say, listen, I'm going to go in the printing business. Here's my business plan.
You've got to have a business plan, and I'm going to lease some equipment, and I got to buy some toners.
And they'll loan you money against that equipment.
I got to hire employees. I'm going to need money for payroll. So is the idea backed up by tangible objects? Well, yeah, in every instance, unless you were Gosh, I'm trying to think of some screwball business where there would be no tangible asset behind the idea. I think 99% of every business plan is going to be backed up by some kind of tangible asset, be it real estate, be it equipment.
Right.
That's what banks
try to loan on. That's what they want to loan on.
Right.
As soon as you get into the area of, you know, taking a loan out for something that doesn't have something they can put their hooks in as a collateral, then it gets much more on shaky ground. That's where you don't get, and that's really going to be hard to do under current conditions. There's no question about it. But banks are in the business of collateralizing loans. That's their whole business. So, as an example, if you, a credit card is an example of you, you know, that's a credit card loan is a little different, and a lot of people have credit cards. The bank doesn't really have collateral in that case, but it's a credit card loan and they're charging a much, much larger interest. One of the reasons is because they don't actually have collateral. When you buy something from the store, you go shopping and your wife comes home with a bunch of bags, obviously the bank doesn't have any hooks in that. But in return, they are going to charge a much, much higher interest rate. And, they do have ways, they do have some avenues, obviously, they can go, but they don't have that loan collateralized the same way. Banks do give lines of credit. That's another thing that banks do. They'll give you a line of credit for things like what you mentioned, Dwayne, like some of it may be payroll, some may be this, some may be that. But if a person comes into a bank and says, well, I have an idea, this is what I want to do, that needs to have, like you said, it has to have equipment and stuff for them to collateralize. That's what they'll do. In the old days, just for me, I was thinking back about this, I was in the printing business many, many years ago, and back then I couldn't get a bank to give me a loan on the printing equipment. So we went out and went to auctions and stuff and found printing equipment at, by the way, ridiculously reduced prices. And yes, some of it had to be fixed up, and we had to spend some money to fix it up and make it run, but this stuff ran forever and ever and ever, and we saved insane amounts of money by simply going out and buying used equipment at auctions or whatever they were called, not really an auction, but, you know, this place where used equipment was being sold of various kinds, and we went across, we got information across the country, and we picked up this printing equipment, and we're able to, you know, get in business for a lot less money than we thought we would. Later, when we had a ability to get credit, et cetera, the banks, even when we were in very good position, the bank would simply loan you money on that piece of equipment, and just like a car payment or whatever, you would, you know, get your payment book each month or whatever, and you'd have to tear it out and make your little payment on your printing machine. So anyway, it's interesting because the banks are loaning. Obviously, we have cars, we have homes being sold, lots more homes being built, but it is still difficult. They're still very tight with the money in general, and they really do want to see that you have the capability of paying it back. And I think half of their, aside from any other theories about why the banks aren't loaning money, one, we just went through a crash, and number two, a lot of businesses have gone out of business.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Just that on its face. You're looking around you watching your comrades just fall over and go out of business. That's a little scary to loan in that environment.
Yeah.
Putting all other reasons aside.
I think that's what bothered me when I went to the East Coast, too. I was surprised at how many of the strip malls had, and even here, the strip malls are still, losing business and are empty.
Right. No, it's just the way it is. So whatever reasons there are other than that, I wouldn't blame them for being a little afraid because of how many things have how many businesses have failed in the last year, the bankruptcies, the whole thing. So
yeah, there you go, Dwayne. That's the one. The Fed's still paying the banks.
It's right here.
To not lend.
Why do something risky?
Right.
As long as you can loan enough money to look like you still have a pulse. Why not take the easy free money? 0.25%.
Yeah, sure.
That's big.
Yeah.
It's huge.
You're hard pressed to go deposit money in a bank yourself and get.
Where are you going to get 25% 0.25% 0.25 on interest? It's just
Right, and remember,
To do nothing. This is true.
On the other hand, if the bank has somebody that they can loan money to who has, that they deem to be a worthwhile person to lend money to, one of the nice things they have going for them right now is they don't have anybody they need to pay money out to in the form of deposits. They're paying nothing.
Yeah.
So even though they're only making 4.5% on a business loan or 5% or whatever it is, they're not paying 4.5% or 3.5% or 2.5% or 1.5% out on interest on deposits.
Right.
So they do have quite a bit of profit for them to make if they find the right, you know, the right guy, the guy that they think, you know, has the ability to stay in his business, et cetera. And remember that although venture capitalists, and, you know, we talked about this before, but venture capitalists are there to fund what often are very, very small businesses that have good ideas. That later, they don't just fund big businesses, they're looking, their whole business is to find the little guy with a good idea, and that idea turns into a really big thing later. So they fund all kinds of things, but you know, the little guy sometimes is funded, and there are avenues for that type of money. I have a very good friend of mine, a guy named Jerry Smith, who's in Arizona, and he spent his whole adult life, and his son now is in that same business, and they are venture capitalists. And they're the ones who told me to get 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10 right is what they're looking for. And right doesn't mean that they just have one payoff. Right means the business runs and it just completely, you know, it really goes. And so they are being very careful by trying to find their perfect customer to loan money to. And they loan it out in little bits and pieces, and the business has to keep making targets and on and on. And they continue with that. And they're taking very high risk, but they're also getting a big percentage of the reward. And so, you know, it's all balanced out. You know, if you really want to have somebody take a risk on an idea sometimes, that may or may not have capital equipment or a lot of it there, but it really is a potentially good idea. Hey, there's people out there that will loan money on that, but you have to be ready to give up a portion of your business in terms of ownership in order to get them to fund it, because they are taking the risk. What do you got there, Dwayne?
Just more of the same.
Yeah.
Why aren't banks lending to small business?
What do they say in this ad? I can't quite read it.
Well, basically, they're probably going to say the same thing. Bernanke, on a speech he made back on March 29th at George Washington University, Bernanke said that lately small businesses have found it difficult to get credit. Too bad that none of the students of the lecture thought to ask him why. A case can be made is that the Fed is partially responsible.
Sure.
Bankers, small business owners, and policymakers all agree that small business lending has declined substantially since before the financial crisis and the Great Recession. Business loans under $1 million fell 13% between June of 2007 and June of 2011, and the amount lent has declined 19% when measured in inflation-adjusted terms. But banks profit by making loans, not refusing them. So why are banks making fewer loans to small businesses these days? The decline is, in part, a response to the Federal Reserve's incentive for banks to increase their lending standards. When bank lending standards increase, fewer companies qualify for loans, cutting small business lending. Small businesses that would have received loans in 2006, when lending standards were less stringent, were unable to get them in 2011, when standards had been ratcheted up. Now, these people are not people responsible for the subprime collapse, okay? These are just small businessmen.
Right.
Kansas City banker Catherine Hunter explained in a recent Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City publication, there are businesses that got loans 5 years ago that would not have today under more traditional lending practices. And it's all part of the fallout. And so it's like I said, until the Fed starts... See, right now, the Fed is incentivizing banks not to lend when they need to do the very opposite. They need to penalize them for not lending their excess capital. See, when they start doing that, then this economy will start flowing real fine. You'll start seeing new businesses open. People will be buying things. People will be buying houses. People will be buying cars. People will be getting jobs. And then everybody will look at each other and go, what the heck was the problem?
Yeah.
The problem is banks were being paid not to lend money.
Yeah. I hope it's that simple solution.
It is. It's that simple. It's the money, stupid. And I'm not talking about you. I'm not calling you stupid.
That's, no, I got you. I
that's
got you.
The statement that was used.
Sometimes
back.
I am stupid, but I wouldn't want to call me that
was,
either.
That was, who was famous for, who made that statement?
That's the economy. That was the guy, the Bill Clinton's guy, the thin, bald guy. That
George. Oh, no,
it's the economy, stupid, you know.
Carville?
Right. Carville. Isn't it Carville?
Yeah. Frank B. says it was Carville.
Yeah, it's Carville.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just hope they'll figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
For the sake of the
Me too.
Okay, so let's move on from we're at the interest rate market. Let's go over to the euro. I don't have anything to add to the euro. We had called for a weekly top in the euro. They continue to decline. The weekly top came 1 week late. We're now in our second week in the decline off of that. This helps the dollar bounce as well. So we'll continue with that as that continues. Don't have anything more to say to it, but. And then on crude oil, we, of course, same thing. This is a longer-term thing. We're calling for a September top in crude oil during the advance, and we're looking for the market to retest $88. The low they've gotten to so far is 90.66, and we'll see if they can get down there and finish that up at some point here as well. Let me think if there's anything else of interest here. Crude's down pretty good today. They've had a pretty good move down. Tesla. Don't have a lot on Tesla today either, although Tesla did have a move down of some importance. And let's see if there's anything else. I kind of, in this particular case with Tesla, for those of you who are interested, if Tesla closes the week above $29.30, and they're trading right now at $30.68, I like the idea of buying them. I think that there's a real possibility that we're already, even though last week we had a big down week, that they may already be ready for further advance. So, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get further into this week.
Michael wants to know if you get anything for cocoa or sugar.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that, as a matter of fact, because we talked about cocoa last week, and this is interesting. This will show you how this works a little bit. Well, last week, starting on the 19th, we talked about a very critical level in cocoa being $25.10, and that under normal conditions, the market would find that as support for an advance of $1 off. And $1 is a pretty good move in cocoa. That's a tradable, definitely a tradable move. If you take a look at this is December cocoa. Then subsequent to that day, the next day, they tested that level. They got down to 25.06. That was on the 20th of September, but they closed slightly above it. Then on the 21st of September, they tested it even lower. They went down to 25.01, and they closed at 25.21. And then today, they opened up slightly above. Today, they opened at 25.26, and they just broke right through the 25.10 level. And this is the inversion. Because we're looking for a dollar move, and if you take today's high, $25.30, take today's low, $25.41, we're just 11 ticks off of a full dollar. This is the example of an inversion. The energy that would normally be expressed on the upside was expressed on the downside, and this would be like any other situation where this occurs in. Here's the $1 move. Here it is right in front of you. Nice big down move. I don't know if you have that chart up or not, Dwayne. There you are. that big bar is that's the move. That's what was supposed to happen. But it happened on the downside. And the way we would know is that the market would break and continue to move below 25.10. They certainly did that today and continued lower. Probably difficult to trade this. Probably difficult to get on this and really take advantage of it. But they should continue and make their full $1 move down. And then we'll have something else on cocoa as we get further into the week probably. Let's see. The Canadian dollar. We're keeping an eye on this. I don't have anything immediately, but depending on some factors here, we may have something in the Canadian dollar soon here. So I'll tell you about that as that we get closer. We don't get a lot of questions about the Canadian dollar, but there you are. Groupon, I'm keeping an eye on that, Dwayne, the Groupon deal. Nothing really big to add to it today. They're just, you know, it's just an interesting stock to watch, and we'll see. They're down on the day as well.
Apple's now down $16.
Yeah, big move. Decent-sized move. Well, in a $700 stock,
it's
I don't know what is
2%.
That. It's 2%. What is it?
It's a little over 2%.
Yeah, it's a good-sized move. Let's see. Anything else? I don't think there's much else right now. At least we have some movement in some of the markets. I mean, I'm
Donald
glad to
Trump's,
see.
Donald Trump's golf course, his newest golf course, may blow up on him.
His what golf course?
His new golf course. I think it's his
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just seeing headlines. He built his latest, and somebody that knows more about this, feel free to correct me. He built his latest golf course on top of an old garbage dump, which seems like a pretty smart and pretty cool thing to do, you know, make use of the land.
Well, that's
and
true.
Reclaim
that's
it.
True.
But apparently there's a methane gas leak there.
Leach.
So
yikes.
The headline was Donald Trump in the rough.
Yeah.
For most of you know that's a golfing term, in the rough. I'm not a golfer, but I'm more of a putt-putt guy. But goofy golf, that's me. If there's no little windmills, then I don't want to go.
So. Well, that's interesting. You know, we talk about the big guys, the big players, they usually make smart moves. He's got himself in a position here where that's something he didn't check out, and somehow that has occurred, and I suppose it's fixable.
What a great example you just brought up. Okay, for those who don't know the Donald Trump story, I'm sure you can go read it because he wrote a book about himself, or a couple.
Mm-hmm.
this man was one prayer away from bankruptcy. He was done, finished, over. He went into a meeting with some bankers, and he literally got down on his knees and begged these guys, give me one more shot. They loaned him $1 million to buy a building in New York City. Today it's called Trump Tower. Back then it was called a Dump Tower.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's now in his 13th season of The Apprentice. And he was the man who almost ran for president. So we think about that. The Donald Trump story, okay, that happened many years ago. That happened in the 70s, mm-hmm. I think, okay?
Yep.
If that same thing happened today, could he get the $1 million? There's a really good chance, based on statistics, that he would not meet the new stringent credit records. Remember, this guy was teeter-tottering on bankruptcy. If those bankers had said no, he was finished.
He would have been Donald Trump.
He would. Yeah. Well, Donald. Lynn says, that was not a good idea with the golf course because as the garbage breaks down, the foundation changes, it's not stable. And, of course, there's the methane gas, which is a byproduct of the rotting garbage. Well, you know, Lynn, I know when you put it like that, it does seem pretty obvious, but I'm going to guess a guy like Donald, who now has access to his own money, he doesn't need other people's money, which means he can get all he needs of other people's money. See, the banks right now will court him because he doesn't need their money. But anyway,
right.
I digress. I'm sure some really smart people and some really smart engineers, you know, considered all of that, and somehow everybody signed off on it and said it was okay and that it would work. But I agree with you, Lynn. I mean, it seems to me that kind of an idea would come with its challenges. But I like the idea that, because, I mean, a garbage dump, he probably got the property for, you know, a pretty fair price.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's probably not a lot of people in bidding wars over garbage dumps, because what are you going to do with it? Maybe you build a housing development, maybe you do any number of things, but I would think the raw land would come very cheap, because now you're going to have to come in and bring in, good Lord knows how much infill to make sure that stuff's buried and stays buried. And this, for all I know, this may have been the first time something has been attempted on this grand of a scale. And so all these engineers who signed off on this thing may be learning a big lesson themselves right now about what can and can't be done.
Right. To say nothing, by the way, of the city and wherever he did this, you know, giving him incentives and other offers, he probably wheeled and dealed with the city. He's very smart. And like we talked about last week, success is a series, a whole series of right decisions. It's not just one. And, you know, he's been able to, you know, whether you like Donald Trump or not, he's been able to make a series of right decisions. And he's made some bad ones. And he's quickly managed, in most cases, managed his losses and went on to continuing to make right decisions. Same thing we want to do in trading. Go ahead.
I was going to say that in New Hampshire, way back, I was on the head of the citizen committee for the Superfund money to cover up an asbestos plant because it was just sitting there and it was abandoned. And if it caught on fire, asbestos just flies through the air and it contaminates everything. And we ended up getting Superfund money to shut that down and turn it into a soccer field. And when they do a dump, so we had a lot of knowledge because the dump that we had in New Hampshire was able to take the asbestos because they were going to close the dump within 1 year. If they didn't get it in there in that time frame, they would have to ship it out of state, which was really, really expensive. And so what they do at the dump, they do a pretty good job of doing the cover-up, but he could have gotten funding from all sorts of federal stuff on that to have that done. He, it probably cost them almost nothing to have that land.
I agree.
So, and you want to put it to good use. And when I was back in New Hampshire, it was nice to drive by that big piece of empty land versus that big old building so that kids could actually, you know, play on it.
There we are. Well, it's an interesting thing, and it's a big success story with Donald and
imagine the average American walking into a bank today and saying, excuse me, I'd like to take out a small business loan. Oh, really? What are you going to do? Well, I'd like to build a garbage – I mean, I'd like to build a golf course on top of a garbage dump.
Yeah. And he's very creative. I mean, you know, you have to give him
that.
Credit. I mean,
oh,
he can be pretty obnoxious, but you have to give him credit. He gets very creative when he does some of these things. He's created a whole bunch of great buildings in Manhattan.
No doubt. He's done very, very well. And you know, I don't want to sound like I'm just keep going back to the fact that he was teeter-tottering on bankruptcy when these bankers, you know, came, because he took that opportunity and he made something of it. So I don't want to take anything away from him. I mean, he was in the right. There was an element of luck involved there, as there is in almost all things. There was a element of luck where the guys, they were just in the right mood. You know, maybe one of them had a great breakfast or a nice dinner the night before. Wink, wink, whatever. And so they looked at each other and shrugged their shoulders and says, "Oh, okay, fine, Donald. We'll give you one more shot." Okay. Now he didn't waste that opportunity. Donald Trump, you know, he could have went out and got his hair done, a lot of other things. He didn't. We know he didn't.
Right.
Because the hair's there.
Right.
He didn't waste his money at the beauty parlor. He took that $1 million and he worked hard and he was creative and innovative. And could he be more polite and could he be nicer to people? Yeah, he could, but that's just not who he is. That's the cartoon caricature he's created of himself is the Donald we all, in most cases, probably love to hate, you know?
Yeah.
And he did it on
purpose. But I, the topic that I wanted to cover today, which we probably won't have time to do today because we're running out of time. I was going to say, you know, people react either by having too much pain will cause you to do something, or gaining pleasure. And in that spot, he was in so much pain that he became resourceful. And so he's what we call a moving away from person, which means is he's a person that will do more to avoid pain than he will to gain pleasure. And so those two things drive us, the ability to avoid pain or gain pleasure. And it's a very powerful thing. And in that moment, when he was almost bankrupt, like you say, he was in that much pain, he was going to survive. And that's when people start to get really, really, really creative, or that they want to have a gain. So figuring out who you are you a person that is more motivated by gaining pleasure or avoiding pain is important, because that's where you'll find your leverage. And I wanted to remind people about the webinar for tomorrow. There's quite a few people that have signed up. If you have not paid for the seminar, you cannot attend. So you need to go to the link that was there on the email that you got sent, or I will be sending out a separate email again for you to get go to the store. You can go to the robindane.com site and go to the store and pay for it then. Once you pay for it, you'll get an approval code to enter the webinar. If you don't have that, you won't be able to attend. So for those of you who are kind of waiting for approval, you need to get your orders in to go into the room. And I think, Duane, you just posted the link for the webinar. So this is creating a powerful trader's identity. It can shift some of your bad habits. It's an interesting process. You can use it for the whole rest of your life for all sorts of different things. But it's a really good way to gain focus on who is the person that you are and who do you want to be. And it will actually shift it. And it's pretty cool. So I do recommend that you go. I am going to be offering it monthly. And so if you signed up and you paid and you can't attend, you'll be eligible to go to the next one if you like. We can make some other arrangements, whatever works for you. But I do suggest that you take advantage of it. I normally charge $200 for this thing, and I'm trying to give you guys something during a bad economy and give you a boost before we get into the real tough season of trading. And I'm giving you a special deal here. So it's possible it's going to go up. So as I go into the year, so definitely take advantage of it. It's for tomorrow. It's at 4:15 Eastern time. It'll run for about an hour, maybe a little bit longer, depending on the questions. I definitely suggest that you go, and it will make a difference in your life. I mean, it will make a huge difference. It's a small price to pay for a big change in your life and your trading. And one, you never know. You know, if you go to a workshop, I don't care if you learn one thing. You know, if you spend $6,000 on a workshop and you learn one thing, if that one thing boosts your trading to the next level, then that was worth it. You know, if you got one thing. So the key thing is to really absorb everything that's there and listen, to pick one thing to help your trading move forward. Sometimes it takes only one little tiny thing, and you go, oh, I wish I can't believe I'm not doing that. I should have been doing that for like 2 years, and your trading would be totally different. So one new idea is absolutely worth it. I will not be here tomorrow, so I'm going to leave it, unfortunately, okay, to my good companions. I'm not going to be here on Tuesdays, unfortunately. Okay. Something came up. I have to book each Tuesday. But I will not be here at the radio, so I have no opportunity to tell you, and hopefully, Duane, you'll just mention it again.
Yep, I will.
I appreciate that, and we'll start promptly at 4:15. But again, pain or pleasure, very important. Are you a moving away from person, or are you a moving towards person? Do you do more to avoid pain? That's a moving away from person. Or do you do more to gain pleasure? That's a moving towards person. Now, there's no right or wrong way in this particular topic. So it's not bad that you're moving away from a person. It just allows you to get leverage for you to move on to the next thing. I found out I thought I was a moving towards person because I like to be really positive. I like to go and err on the side of something positive versus negative. I'm always looking for a new solution to any kind of challenge that I get. And so I thought I was a moving towards person. Well, I come to find out that I'm a moving away from person. That moves me faster. And I found that out when I was doing an exercise at one of Tony's seminars when I first started his work. And I had to climb a 50-foot telephone pole, stand at the top, and we had a trapeze bar that was positioned about maybe oh, I don't know, six feet, 5 feet away that you had to jump and reach for and grab it. You're on a tether, obviously. And it was a huge challenge. And I asked my team, because we had a team of like 50 people, and I said, can I go first? I don't want to go first to be anything special, but if I don't go first and I see everybody climbing, then I'm going to talk myself out of going. So could you help me get up the pole? Would you mind if I went first? So I get halfway up the pole, and I'm hugging this telephone pole, and I'm out of shape, and I can't move, and I'm absolutely frozen. I knew I would never go down and go down. I knew I would attempt to accomplish this, but I didn't know when I was going to go up. And everybody kept yelling words of encouragement. Come on, you can do it. You can do it. Just take one more step. You can. And I was frozen. I was just absolutely emotionally and physically stuck. And then all of a sudden, I got very, very quiet. And the coach yelled up to me, who was in charge of our team. This is when I first started, in charge of our team. And she says, so how much longer do you want to be in pain? Well, they said it was like somebody lit a fire under my butt. And I flew up that pole and stood up at the top and just was amazed, that, first of all, that I had done it. But I went so quickly. And then I dove for the trapeze bar. I grabbed it for a split second, and it slipped out of my hands. And I came down, and I cried all the way down. And I couldn't believe how stuck I was and how that released all of my pain. And every person that climbed the pole that day, I cried with them every single time. They went up, I cried. They went up, I cried. And so I was so emotionally drained. But what I realized was I was a moving away from person. And I did more to avoid pain than I would to gain pleasure. And so that's where my leverage comes from. So anytime I get stuck, anytime I'm in a place where I can't move, I keep going, okay, so how much longer do you want to be in pain? And then I find that I move right through it, because I use that as a metaphor. So understanding those two ideas of pain and pleasure and to motivate you can be very, very powerful in situations where you feel that you're stuck. So I just wanted to bring that up, and that's my pain and pleasure thing. And I have two quotes. And this quote is, why, and this is related to don't take yourself too seriously. Wise men don't need advice. Fools don't take it. And that's by Benjamin Franklin, which I thought was kind of interesting.
That's interesting.
And I have another one here, is vanity is the quicksand of reason. And it's George Sand. And I thought that was for you, David. That to me was a David thing. Vanity is the quicksand of reason. And I just love that. I'm going to say thank you to you guys today. Thank you so much. I'm so glad Ben was able to come on today. You know, if you've never checked out Ben's stuff, he's really, really, really amazing. Traders Audio, right?
TradersAudio.com. Lynn has a question for you. If we pay for one seminar, can we attend each month without paying again? Just wondering.
If you pay for one seminar and there's a need to do the second seminar, you need to send me an email and we'll figure that out. It's not an ongoing thing. It's you will get a private one-on-one call from me. That's why the space is limited, and we're almost right at the brink of cutting it off. So you will get a one-on-one call with me, and you can answer your questions and then go through the process. So there's not really a need to do the seminar a second time. There would be no value to it. You're going to get all the information you need from that workshop. So my goal always is, did the customer or the client get the information and understand it? And I'm always available if you don't. So I don't see you repeating that, but I am going to have another workshop, actually two more coming online with that I'm going to offer monthly. And so you can just, attend the other ones as well, which are different topics. But I don't think you'll need to. But if you do, you need to call me and we will make arrangements.
Okay. All right, great. And David, there's a final question for you from Richard from October 3rd to October 9th. In his work, he's got a bunch of stuff coming together, and he's wondering if you have that time period as possibly important for volatility or potential reversals in possibly mini markets.
Mini markets. I don't even have anything for or set up for dates that far out yet. I'm trying to trade into the nearby dates right now. If you give me just a moment here. I mean, we're going to have something in October. Very, very early October I have something that's coming up.
He's asking about October 3rd through the
9th. Yeah, that's very early October, but I don't have anything beyond that right now. All my stuff right now is just, you know, I'm trying to find things that we can trade into or out of right now immediately in front of us. And we do sometimes move out in time. I don't have much of that at this very moment. I do like the month of October just as a seasonal thing. It's usually a volatile period of time. There's no question about it. You know, it seems like ever since the crash of 87, you know, people look at that month of October with a certain glaze in their eyes, and they know trouble's coming. So probably, you know, October is going to be volatile just seasonally. To take nothing away from any other ideas that he has for what, you know, he's looking for. But I don't have anything really big right now. I haven't gone out that far just recently here. With the market so quiet, I'm just trying to trade into smaller, close-by completions of things, you know, the stuff that we normally talk about. So as we get closer, though, I'll be very happy to bring up the specific dates in October that we have. I don't know if he's talking about, he just has, sounds like to me like he has a week or so in there that's very big for a lot of
culminations. Yeah, in his work, he's got a huge amount of planetary configurational.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I believe it. I just don't have it to confirm it right here at this moment. So,
okey-doke.
But I appreciate him bringing that up.
All right, guys. Well, listen, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Dwayne. We'll be back tomorrow with you. Dwayne, or Robin, too.
Robin, we'll see you Wednesday.
Yep, David and Dwayne, thank you very much. And again, I'm going to send out reminders. So I will send out a little reminder to you, Dwayne, just so you
can
mention that. You'll still have time tomorrow, but you have to pay for the workshop to get in there. And you can do that either by doing it through the registration. It'll pop you right into the store, or you can go to the robindane.com site and go into the store that way and look up the webinar that way and do it that way. Once you get that in, I get the confirmation, and then I send you the link to get into the webinar. And you're all set and approved.
All right.
And thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Robin. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
And everyone have a nice afternoon and trade safely. We'll see you then.
See you tomorrow.
Have a great day.
I didn't notice what time.
Guys, that is that's gonna do it for us. Gonna wrap it up. Now, this tweet on the S&P last night to consider being short below 1450. That was good for a 5-point decline. I didn't talk about that earlier. 5-point drop, and then it ran right back up here to 1450 today. And then it took a drop to 47. Because I almost always get that question, or I often get that question. If an area like that is good for a move, if price revisits that area, is it good for a second move? And if you go out to the blog, and if on the blog you do this, hang on, I'll bring up a browser window. Go to the blog, and you click this blog link at the top of the page. It will give you a table of contents. And you can scroll down to right here. Why important prices are almost always tested. If you click on that, it'll take you straight to that post that I wrote that back on July 26. It goes into some detail, and it shows you, it's very brief, but it gives you an idea of how that concept seems to carry out over and over and over. Does it always? There's very little always in trading. There's often, there's quite a bit, there's highly probable, there's consistent regularity, but when you start hearing the word always, you need to be pretty suspicious, okay? Because there's just, do the markets always open at 9:30 Eastern on days that are not holidays or weekends? Always. Except after 9/11, they didn't. So I have to say, almost always. Right? That's the only time I know of that the market didn't open on a regularly scheduled trading day at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. After all the years the markets had been open, up until September the 11th, 2001, on the 2nd, which was a Wednesday, the markets did not open at 9:30 Eastern. So, think about that question. Do the markets always open at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on regularly scheduled trading days? The go-to answer would be always. But see, that's not true. Almost always. So you may have something that you're working with or looking at or considering, and so far, it's an always. Well, eventually, it's probably going to become an almost always. Okay, but is almost always really good? Huh, yeah. If you can get into the neighborhood, if you even get into the periphery, if you can get within spitting distance of almost always, you're in a really good place. Okay. High probability is what we strive for. But if you have a trading strategy that only offers you, you're only right. Now, I wrote this the other night for a baseball player. If you step up to the bat and can hit the ball. Now, I'm not talking about a home run or a grand slam. I'm talking about if you can just hit the ball 3 out of 10 times at bat. Now, 10 times at bat, you get 3 swings. So that's 90 possible swings. If you can hit the ball 3 times, your batting average will be 300. Let's see, 10 times at bat times 3 swings, yeah, that's 300. Okay, and if you can hit the ball 3 times at bat, yeah, that gives you a batting average of 300. Okay, that won't quite get you in the Hall of Fame, I don't think, but you will be considered excellent. You will be an excellent hitter if you can just hit the ball, not home run or grand slam, just hit the ball 3 times out of 10 at bat. The last time there was a guy who could hit the ball on average 4 times out of 10 at bat was Ty Cobb. And I put this on the blog the other night. I think it was like 1942. And no one has been able to duplicate that since then. No Major League Baseball player has had a batting average over 400 since Ty Cobb. Think about that. So if your trading strategy, hey, there are lots of people out there who have a trading strategy where they only, quote unquote, hit the ball 4 times out of 10. What does that mean in trading, hit the ball? Well, it means that the trade ends in a profit. Okay. But overall, they are profitable in the business of trading. How's that possible? Well, their winning trades are larger than their losing trades. When they have a trade that does what they expect it to do, they're able to stay with that trade for a greater distance than when they find out that they're wrong up front initially. That's called a stop loss. They take their loss, they get out, and Mike Reed is a really great one for doing this. And his book, Read the Greed, Take the Money, that's a great starting point. But then he has his DVD course, Read the Greed, Take the Money Live, which is about, I think with the second version, second edition, there's maybe 15 hours or more of live trading on those DVDs. You should take a look at that, TradeStalker.com. And Mike was on his way to being a professional baseball player before tragedy struck. But here's another guy who did kind of what Donald Trump did, in that he took the hand that was dealt him, and he did something tremendous with it, something fantastic, something that is not the norm. So think about that, because I know that in trading, when you go in and you sit down in the morning and you've spent the night before, the weekend before, trading the market in your head, and you know, maybe just looking at charts and, you know, doing some math, and man, you've got this thing wired, okay? And so you're pretty excited, you're pretty pumped, you're pretty positive about all things. You've maybe done some visualization. Maybe you've spent some time in prayer, maybe even put on a couple worship songs and just really got your spirit built up. Then the opening bell rings, you put on a trade, and the world is filled with limitless possibilities, and wham! No sooner do you get out of the gate and you're stopped out, and your spirit is crushed. But somehow you manage to pull it together and you put on another trade, and there's no way it could happen twice in a row, and no sooner are you out of the gate, you're stopped out. Now you don't just have a crushed spirit. Now you've got some depression going on, and you're starting to question your own sanity, and you're beginning to wonder if people really can make money from the markets, and you're only two trades into the day. Does that sound familiar to anybody? You ever gone through that? Okay. You gotta back up and take a bigger picture approach. Now, in the live trading room every day, the majority of our trades are using, in the ES, we have a 2-point bracket. It's a 2-point target, a 2-point stop. Okay. That 2-point stop, we aggressively manage that risk. In other words, once the trade has moved 1 point or 4 ticks in our favor, we typically move that stop up to break even or break even plus a tick. Does that cause us to get stopped out of a lot of trades at break even plus a tick? Yeah, it does. Okay. But what does that do? If you learn to trade that way, you'll be able to stay in the business of trading long enough to actually learn how traders think, how traders behave, and ultimately how traders trade. To use a line of David's, just because you have money in an account somewhere does not make you a trader. It makes you an individual who is in a position to learn the business of trading. Because in order to learn how to be a trader, you must, in fact, have some money in an account somewhere. You can simulate till the cows come home, and I highly encourage you, when you do fund an account, that you don't dive in and start trading real money. No, you spend time in that simulator. You want to be consistently profitable. I'm not saying you got to be profitable every day, but over the course of a month, you're consistently profitable, okay, in that simulator. So often we think, well, you know, I'm not doing so hot in the simulator, but yeah, that's because I know it's not real. If I can add the pressure of it being real, you know, if I can add the pressure of not being able to make, you know, some important payment, Then I'll set up, pay attention, and the universe will be kinder to me, and I'll do better. Well, you're going to find out that doesn't work. And then the next step up of that particular brand of madness is that you go live with one contract or two or three or five, and you find you're experiencing the same difficulties you were experiencing in the simulator. And so now your clever mind convinces you that the way to fix the problem is to increase the number of contracts. Not go back to the simulator. No, your clever mind would never hand you that kind of sanity. Your clever mind goes, you know, who are you fooling? One contract, three contracts. You need to go large, you know. Go big or get back on the porch. So you come out, dukes up with 10 contracts, and you get knocked to your knees. All right. If I can just pull off one 20 contract trade, that's going to get me back to break even, and I'll be up for the day, and I can walk out of here with some dignity and self-respect. That's probably the day you either crawl out or they carry you out. Okay? Don't do it. Don't abuse yourself. Don't torture yourself. And think about what I said about the baseball player analogy, the guy at bat. In the live trading room, we're going to teach you to work within a bracket. We're going to teach you to aggressively manage your risk. Once you learn the basic setups, once you learn how our indicators work, then over time, we've got so many guys that are CFRN partners where we've watched this whole transition take place. Pretty soon, they're not going for a two-point target. They're going for three. They're going for four. They're going for five. They're going for six. That's been a little difficult here of late with these tight markets. But yet they're not increasing their risk. Their risk is still 2 points. Our belief is that any time you use the time frame to trade the ES with that we use in the live trading room, you never need more than 2 points risk. Now, some of the tweets that I put on in the afternoons, overnight, on Globex, those do require additional risk. You can take the tweet that I put out. You can then go to a smaller, because I'm basing tweets on hourly or larger time frames. You can take that number, just like that 1450 from last night. You can take that number and you can go to a smaller time frame. Okay. Oh, thanks, Paul. Paul says it was Ted Williams in 1941. He batted 406, or .406, I guess is how you say that, playing with the Boston Red Sox. You can tell I'm not really a sports guy, but thank you for that, Paul. That's the exact number. Ted Williams, last guy to bat over 400, as I understand it, and that was in 1941. Now, what's interesting, when Roger Banner, was that his guy's name, or am I confusing him with the Hulk? Was Roger Banner the first guy to break the four-minute mile? Yeah, Roger Bannister. Maybe that's the Hulk. I think it's Roger Banner was the first guy to break the four-minute mile. Nobody in history, in recorded history, Bannister, that's right. No one in recorded history had ever broken the four-minute mile. But once Roger cracked it, and you know he almost didn't run that day, it was raining, and they were holding an umbrella over his head, and I heard the interview. It's very compelling. And his trainer or coach or somebody you can hear in this recording saying, you know, maybe you shouldn't do this today. And he said, no, I'm going to go for it. And that was the day that man, in recorded history, broke the four-minute mile. There could have been some guy long ago being chased by a... my son would shoot me that I don't know the name of a dinosaur, Tyrannosaurus rex, a T-Rex. You know, there may have been a guy way back in the day that broke the four-minute mile with a big dinosaur in his tail. I don't know. But in recorded history, that was earth-shattering, four-minute mile. But once he did it, then all of a sudden people started doing it left and right. It almost became commonplace. Now, how come that didn't happen with Ted Williams and batting? Dan says that was Elijah running from Jezebel. Yeah, Dan, that could be. So when Ted Williams put up that 400 batting average, how is it that since 1941, nobody's been able to equal that? Why isn't it like the four-minute mile? Now, I'm going to say that a lot of people, when they go out and start running track in high school or wherever it might be, they have that in their mind, I want to be able to do a four-minute mile. I mean, it's like a goal, and so they work towards it. I can't tell you for sure why people don't have that batting average anymore since Ted. Is it because pitchers have gotten better with, you know, the curveball or the spitball or the whatever ball or the fastball? I mean, those guys throw those balls really fast. I understand that. But I'm sure batters have gotten equally better at batting. But I wonder sometimes if maybe too many of them, especially the really good ones, when they step up to the plate, their focus is not on just hitting the ball, but their focus is on knocking it out of the park. Think about that. When you step up to your trading platform to trade, is your goal to bunt your way to first base? Or are you trying to knock it out of the park? Because if every time you approach the trading desk, your trading platform, if you're trying to knock it out of the park, and if that's where your focus is, you're going to miss a lot of potentially profitable trades. You're going to, although there's nothing wrong with having high expectations and aspirations and setting, you know, goals for yourself, but make them reasonable goals. And so that's why it's important that you understand what a reasonable expectation is in the market. See, last week we were locked inside of a 12-point range. So if you came into the market saying, man, I've got this deal, you know, it's 1-3 risk ratio, and I'm going for 15 points. Well, you got stomped out every day last week because the market never did go, or you never did get your 15 points. There, let me just say it like that. I'd have to go look at the charts to find out if you got stopped out, and it would depend on where your stop was, etc. Do you follow me? See, when the market is handing you base hits or doubles or singles, you know, or a bunt and a walk, I don't know, maybe part of your strategy needs to be seeing what the market is offering today. Okay? If you're standing in the middle of an apple orchard, I don't care how badly you want an orange or a banana. Unless you brought your lunch, you won't find it there. Okay? So look at the markets. There's a little tool in your trading platform. It's called the ATR, Average True Range. We don't get into it a lot because we've been staring at these charts for so long that we just glance at a chart and we kind of know what the range is and the time period that we're looking at. But if you're new, or even if you're not new and you've never used that tool or never thought about the markets in this manner, then I encourage you to break out the ATR, the Average True Range. And if you're looking at an hourly chart or a daily chart, if you're looking at an hourly chart and the Average True Range for the last 14 periods, now you can look back as many periods as you want. The default look back period on most charting platforms is 14 days, 14 hours, 14 minutes, 14 5-minute periods, whatever you've got your chart on. If you run the ATR, the default on most platforms will look back 14 periods of that time and then give you an average. So if the ATR on an hourly chart, let's just do it. Insert. Indicators. And let's see, what do we need? We need volatility, average true range, create new area. It's already checked. If yours is not checked, check create new area. And then click OK. Right now, the ATR, average true range, is 2.5 points per hour. What does that mean? That means that this hourly candle we're working on right now, which only has 9 minutes under its belt, because we count from the half hour, because the market's open on the half hour, which is something we learned from David years ago. On average, this hourly candle should be 2.5 points. Will it actually be 2.5 points? Probably not. It'll probably be 2.25 or 2.75. Or if there's a breakout, it could be something big. Or if the markets go stale, it could be 1 point. Okay? But this gives you an idea of what's realistic. Well, I'm willing to stay in the trade for more than an hour. Okay, that's fine. But at least you know that if you go back 14 of these hourly candles, see, here's a little bitty one. The low was 45.50, and the high was 46.50. So that only had two. Okay. Average true range. Now let's go under properties. Yeah, see right there. Well, I'll open it up so you can see. I'm double-clicking so it'll give me the properties. There we go. You scroll all the way down, it's 14. Now, if you want to look back farther than that, you can. Or what you might want to do is you might say, you know, I only want to go back to since the open. I don't want to look at the overnight stuff. I want to get an ATR of the day session. Okay, the market opened at 8:30, so we're in the, let's see, 11:30, we got 2 hours left. Let's see, 8:30, 9:30, 10:30. Are we in the fifth hour? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think that's right, but you'll understand what I'm doing here. Okay, I don't want to look at Globex. I don't want to go back 14 bars. I only want to go back to the day's open, so I'm going to put 5. Now see, that only slightly changed the average true range. Let's see what happens if I really expand it. Instead of 14, I'll look at 28. Still pretty consistent, right around 2.5 points. Okay, so that's pretty good information. Now, can you do the same thing on a daily chart? Yeah, let's go look. And while we're at it, let's look at this daily chart. Let's go back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days ago. Here's Fed day right here, big green candle. That was a Thursday, and here's the Friday that tested the top of the price channel that began back here in June. You could argue it began in May, but it began in June. However, we could not establish the channel until this day, July 25th, because that was the first time we could connect this to this. Okay. Prior to that, could you have connected this to this? Yes. Could you have connected this to this? Yes. But then when this happened, you would have realized I've got to widen my channel. And see, if there had been a lower low over here, we would have had to widen the channel to that until such a time that we realize we now have a channel going in the other direction. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 touches later, on the day after the Fed announces QE3, we get a breakout, but we close well off the high of the day. And so that was a day that we typed in up here, failed breakout, question mark. And you could almost argue that we have had all these inside days since then. But I realize they're not truly inside days. But let me blow it up a little bit. I don't want to get this chart out of whack because it's kind of an important chart. But if we just look at the bodies of the candles and not the wicks, I could make a good argument because each body opened and closed inside the body of that Friday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days. That's highly unusual, guys. It really is. Just like on Friday, I talked about this last week, about it would be a big deal only because it had never happened again, or it had never happened before. Remember, I started this little segment out talking about how it's rare that you're able to say always in relation to the world of trading. Well, I was able to say something akin to always last week. And I'll show you the chart. This is from Friday's post. If you scroll down, let's see, I even wrote a little commentary. Rip Van Futures. First, we had a 60-year historic 8-point range in the S&P, and now we have a CFRN weekly trading zone record. Never before has the week opened, traded, and closed inside of only one weekly trading zone. Now I can, that's an always, okay, not, except it's, I'm not saying that's always going to happen because I'm saying really the opposite. It's the first time it ever happened. But that's almost as big a deal as an always, okay? I don't know whether to sing Danny Boy or play Rock the Casbah, so I've settled for streaming Al Green, Let's Stay Together, because I had been watching The Voice that night, and someone did such a tremendous rendition of that song that I couldn't get it out of my head. And so I wanted to get it in your head. And I promise you, if you go there and click this and let Al sing that song to you just once, it'll be in your head. All right, so let's go look at that chart. This is last week, Monday. This is one weekly trading zone here. Okay, there's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, I know we popped a little bit out of the top on a couple of occasions, but we never made it to a higher zone. Each time we turned right around and got back inside the zone. And when we popped out of the bottom, we immediately went back inside the zone. These are hourly candles. And we popped out here with a really long wick. And the day that happened, I said, wow, that is incredibly bullish. And look what happened. Went straight back up to that next zone. And then on Friday's open, I commented here. Some of you will remember. I said, that is extremely bearish. That is called in the world of candlesticks dark cloud cover. You can go Google that. You can actually go to the CFRN blog, and we have a number of posts about different candlestick patterns and what they mean. There's literally hundreds of them, but there's like 10 to a dozen that if you'll commit those to memory, if they become a language you speak without even thinking about it, it will greatly benefit your understanding of markets and your trading ability. The book I recommend is written by Steve Bigelow. He was on the radio program a couple times many years ago. He trades for a living, plus he does his course. He trades equities. He used to trade futures, but then he switched to the world of equities, which is the opposite of what I did. I traded equities and went to futures, so to each his own. But being able to read candlestick patterns, it's whether you're looking at corn or livestock or lumber or the S&P 500 E-mini futures or Apple. His argument was that in the world of futures, he was limited to the universe of opportunities he might see on any given day. In the world of publicly traded equities, there's, I don't know, I think 8,000, somewhere in there, publicly traded stocks. So you can run a scan and go through, if you like dark cloud cover, you can literally run a scan that will bring you up every stock that had dark cloud cover. And you can give it other parameters, too. I want a stock that's been climbing on increasing volume, or in this case, I would ask it to find me stocks that have been increasing on declining volume. I'd want a minimum of 1 million to 2 million shares on average traded per day. I would want it to be a stock valued at more than probably $2 to $3. Most firms have a rule like the Merrill Lynch's of the world. They won't even talk to you about a stock, or and they're not even allowed legally to recommend a stock to you that doesn't have a price of $5 or more, unless you're a very special high wealth client, and then there are some instances where they can talk to you about more speculative stocks that carry a higher degree of risk. So, when this dark cloud cover was put in, I pointed it out on Friday. I says, guys, that's bearish. Is that as bearish as this was bullish? You know, I would have to give this, you know, an 8 out of 10, perhaps. 9 out of 10. This is more a 6 to 7 out of 10. What would have made this a 10 out of 10 would be if the body of this candle had been up above the wick and not just above the body. This, you know, this is probably more like a 5 out of 10, but look what happened. Okay, we had a bullish candlestick signal here, sent it to the next zone. We had a bearish candlestick signal here, dark cloud cover, and it sent it down to this close, weekly close, at 1451.50. Is this a genetically modified market? Is the world coming to an end? Has the Pope ever been in the woods? We don't know the answers to those questions, and we're not attempting at this point to infer anything more than a statistical anomaly the size of the Grand Canyon in reverse. If you are a technical trader, you're probably quite familiar with the term standard deviation. What happened this week tweaked our standard deviation from 7 to 1. In the grand scheme of things, that has to mean something very significant. I don't know what that thing is. I just know when something happens that has never happened before, there's got to be some meaning there. Do you want to call it the quiet before the storm? Do you want to, you know, hang any number of labels on it? Do you want to venture a guess as to what it means? I would love to hear it. support@cfrn.net. If you'd like to come on the show tomorrow, show me some charts. Say, hey, Dwayne, based on that thing having never happened before and the activity we've seen in the markets of late, I think this might be going on or this might be happening. I would love to hear your take on it. Okay? Now, I brought up the daily chart so that we could put the ATR on the daily chart. Let's do that. Okay, let me get my chart scaled back. Okay. So we're going to go to Insert, Indicators, Volatility, Average True Range. Create new area if it's not checked. Okay. The current average true range, looking back over 14 periods, because that's the default, is 13.7 per day. Okay. Now let's play with that number a little bit and see what kind of changes we get. Let's look at it over the last 2 days. See how it dropped way down, 10.8? Now, let's see. I can only go back. Let's see. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. I can go back 90 days, looks like. So let's do that. Just double-click this indicator down here. Got to click it just right. There we go. So let's look back 90 days and see what the average true range is. It jumps way up to 16.5. Now, prior to this here, the average true range for the last 2 years had been between 18 and 20 points per day. That includes both the Globex as well as the day session. Okay, 18 to 20 points. Now, if we go back to the default, and the defaults are usually what most of the world is looking at. 14, 13.7. So, my point was earlier is that if you have a strategy that says, hey, today I'm looking to take 15 points out of the S&P E-mini 500. Well, you got one thing going against you right here. Over the last 14 days, the average price has not supported that. Okay? In order to take 15 points out of the market today, now you could do it by taking multiple smaller bites out of the market. In other words, a couple base hits, you know? Let's say you're going for, well, if you're looking for only 2 points, then you would need 7, 8 trades to do it. And so you could do it with 7 or 8 trades, or the equivalent of that would be to increase the number of contracts that you're trading. But you shouldn't increase the number of contracts you're trading unless you've grown into that number. See, to just say I've been trading one, but because I want to do better, I'm going to trade 10. See, it's more than a mouse click. I mean, it's that simple, and it's not that simple. Because when you start looking at that DOM and those price fluctuations as that trade goes live, if you've been trading one and suddenly you're staring at numbers that represent 10, see, if you're using a 2-point stop on one contract, the most you're going to lose on that trade is $100. If you're trading 10 contracts, the most you can lose is $1,000. And that's if your stop doesn't get jumped, which on most markets, most days, it won't happen to you. If you're trading 20 contracts, the most you can lose is $2,000. So to jump from a potential loss of $100 to a potential loss of $2,000 on any given trade, that puts a lot of pressure on you. And if you've not grown into that psychologically by adding one contract at a time, it's going to put undue pressure on you, and I don't recommend it. Okay? Start with one, go to two, and the way you go from one to two is the margin to trade an E-mini contract with Daniel's Trading The margin intraday is about $550. So if you're trading with a two-point bracket, in other words, you've got a two-point target and a two-point stop, you need five consecutive winning trades where you take 2 points out of the market and you just made $500. What's the chance that you'll have five consecutive winning trades without any trades getting stopped out? Well, it could happen, but chances are it won't. So you'll probably end up having to make 10 trades to hit. Over the course of 10 trades, at some point you hit the five, you get the thing back in your favor, so that now you do have net profit of $500 in your trading account. Let's say you opened your trading account with $5,000, and after however many trades it took, you now have $5,500 in your account. Okay, you earn the right to trade two contracts. Now this thing starts to build pretty quickly, because now you're trading two contracts. So if you make 2 points, you're not making $100 anymore, you're making $200. So if you can just put together three consecutive winning trades, or however many it takes for you to earn, to have three, the net result of three winning trades times 200, that's $600. You just earned the right to trade a third contract. Okay, now if you take 2 points out of the market trading three contracts, okay, each 2 points is going to be worth, see, one contract is worth 50, okay, 2 points is 100. So with two contracts, it's 200. With three contracts, it's 300. So now, if you have two winning trades back-to-back, or whatever it takes to give you that equivalent, you just made another $600, and you earned the right to add one more contract. Now you're trading four. Okay? Two consecutive winning trades, or whatever it takes to be the equivalent of that, you've earned the right to now trade five contracts. Okay? So now, trading five contracts, a 2-point winning trade will bring you $500. So in one winning trade, you earn the right to trade an additional contract. Okay, so now you're trading six contracts. So a winning trade, 2 points, will make you $600. Can you continue to build like that? Sure. Or can you say, I've done pretty good, and I'm doing pretty good, and I'm pretty comfortable right here. Maybe I need to kind of just pause in this area for a while, because I got here pretty quick. Let me just get the feel of the territory, and then in a month or in 2 months or however long that you determine is right for you, I'll go back to increasing the number of contracts. Because, see, once you get up to six contracts, yes, a winning trade is worth $600, but a losing trade also cost you $600. Now, go back to the day when you were trading just one contract. In order to lose $600, you would have had to have been wrong six times in a row to lose $600. But now that you've worked your way, earned your way up to trading six contracts, now it only takes one losing trade to cost you $600. So the ability for this thing to compound is so compelling that you never need to rush this thing, because the markets are going to be open almost every day unless it's a weekend or a regularly scheduled holiday. Time will pass quickly. When you first start trading, you are very eager to just get your hook in the water and start making the big bucks. Okay? If you take nothing else away from what I've said over the past hour, let it be patience. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with your account. If your initial opening balance was $5,000, okay, and if you follow the formula I just laid out, and let's say you get up to that point where you're now trading the two contracts or the three contracts, what that means is unless things turn sour on you in a big way, okay, you'll never jeopardize that initial $5,000 you deposited because you're trading on profits that you earned from the market. If you find yourself getting pushed back to that, you know, you've had a string of trades that didn't work out, and that's the nature of trading. It's going to happen. Not if, but when, okay? What do you do? Well, it's very simple. You earned your way up to six contracts, but through a series of events, whether it was you made a mistake or the markets just, you know, didn't behave the way they had been behaving, and whatever the reason, okay? And so now, here you were cooking, man, and you were stoked, you were happy, you'd done everything the way it was supposed to be done, the way I just explained it. But through a series of events, you suddenly find yourself getting whacked down $3,000-$4,000, and all you've got in your account now is the $5,000 you started out with. Your clever brain is going to tell you to go trade 20 contracts and fix it, or 10. That's all you can trade is 10 with $5,000. Your clever brain is going to tell you, oh, just go trade 10 and get, you know, two trades right, and you'll be in tall cotton again. Okay? Don't listen to the clever brain. We have lizard brains, okay? When you started out with the $5,000 account, you allowed yourself to trade how many contracts? One. Take the slap on the wrist, the rap on the knuckles, whatever. Learn the lesson and go, oh, okay, I know how to do this. I already did it. I just did it. And I did it okay. So, there's no, I feel bad. I was trading six contracts. Now I got to go back to one. There's no shame in that. Recognizing and understanding that that's exactly what you need, what you should do, what you need to do, and what you must do to keep this train on the tracks is, yes, you need to go back to one contract with no guilt, no shame, no remorse, because you're doing the right thing. And as long as you're doing the right thing, that doesn't come with guilt, that doesn't come with shame, that doesn't come with remorse. That's the type of decision that a smart businessman makes. So I want you to be encouraged. I want you to set goals for yourself. But I want you to make sure that they are reasonable goals. And I want you to build your trading business without ever having to put at risk more than your initial $5,000 contract. Now, many will tell you, you've heard it said on this radio show, don't deposit more than you're willing to lose, because almost all traders blow up their first account and their second one. Well, sadly, that's true. But if you follow the formula I just laid out and you begin with one contract and you're looking for 2 points and you're risking 2 points, the most you can lose on any given trade, unless your stop gets jumped, which is rare, the most you're going to lose on any trade is $100. So that means you would have to be wrong 50 times in a row, literally, to blow out your $5,000 account. Once you get below, I think, $700, I don't even know if they'll let you trade at that point without adding some money. But you see what I'm saying? You put in $5,000, you're trading one contract, You know, if you get your 2 points for the day, you make $100, that's no big deal. You're not getting excited, but you're building a business model. Okay? And if you find yourself on the wrong side of the trade too many times, the good news is you can be wrong 10 times in a row and you still have $4,000 in your account. You could be wrong 20 times in a row and you still got $3,000 in your account. So all is not lost. However, if you've had that many trades go wrong, go sour on you in succession or over a given short period of time, you need to stop. You need to call Bert toll free at 866-928-3310. You need to say, "Hey Bert, I know you've been watching my account because that's your job, that's what you do, and I know you've got years of experience, and I know that you've seen lots of traders blow up their accounts by doing crazy things, the wrong thing, and I don't want to be that guy. Okay? I'm not trying to get rich overnight, Bert. I just want to succeed in the business of trading. Will you help me?" You will give that man goosebumps. Because the people that make that call, that have the humility to make that phone call, are rare. They're as rare as Ty Cobb. That's how rare they are. You'll give the man goosebumps and he'll go, "God, I would love to help you." And he will. He'll go back and walk through the trades you took that didn't go your way. And he'll point out things that his years of experience allow him to see that you might not see. You might hear things like, "There really was no setup there." Or you might hear him go, "On this one, you did everything right. Picture perfect. The market just went the other way." Now, that's going to educate you, and it's also going to take a tremendous amount of pressure off of you, because you're going to start to believe that you're not a total screw-up, that you're an utter failure. Some of that negative self-talk, that it doesn't creep in when we get stopped out. It rushes in, okay? It rushes in. It overwhelms us. You need to get outside of your own head. Go talk to Bert. Toll free. 866-928-3310. Now, you might be saying, "Well, I'd love to be able to do that, but Bert's not my broker." Okay. Number one, you can always change that. You can make him your broker. Or you can call him anyway, and even though you're not his client, he'll help you anyway. I'm going to repeat that because you probably never heard that before. Okay, this is like one of those always things. You probably never heard that before. Why would a broker bother helping you, spend time helping you, if you're not even his client? When you make the next trade, he's not even going to earn a commission off your trade. Why would he do that? Well, as I've been telling you for a long time, Bert and Leslie are very unique in the world of trading. They're very unique as brokers. They are concerned about your longevity. Many brokerage firms have a churn and burn mentality. Bert and Leslie, yes, they would like you to be a client today, but more important, they would like you to be a client 10 years from now. So even if you're not a client, they'll give you some of their time to help you sort out whatever problems that you're having. No obligation. They won't twist your arm. But I think once you go through that, you take his advice or her advice, you apply it, and you find out there's benefit to what the information that they've given you, you'll start thinking about where you do want to spend your commission dollars, because here's the deal, you've got to spend them somewhere. Wouldn't it be nice to spend them with someone who who actually appreciates your business. Not only someone who appreciates your business, but someone who is willing to work to earn your business. See, they're willing to work for you up front without getting paid in hopes that you might realize the value that they bring to the table, and maybe someday you will choose them to be your broker. Okay? And they'll talk to you anytime. Say, hey, I'm a member of the CFRN radio audience, and Dwayne said that if I called you, that you would help me. With no hesitation in their voice, they'll go, absolutely. How can I help? And then you just got to lay it out. Don't hold anything back. Don't hide anything. Whatever, you know, you might be making some mistakes that you know are mistakes, and so you're ashamed to bring it up. When they say, are you following your plan? Don't say, yes, I'm following my plan, if you're not. See, they can only help you if you tell them the truth, if you give them all the facts. They have the experience, they have the knowledge, they can help you, but you have to be honest with them. They're not going to judge you. They're certainly not going to chide you. They're not going to put you on the hot seat. Again, they're going to try to help you because they want to earn your business. Now, most brokers are not willing to work without getting paid to earn your business. Yeah, they'll hand you a business card. They'll shake your hand. They'll be friendly with you on the phone when you call to open an account. But you try calling a broker and ask him to roll up his sleeves and spend the next couple days helping you get on track, and you're going to hear, whoa, hang on, maybe you don't understand how this business works. You make me your broker, you deposit some money in the account with our firm, and then I'll help you. Okay? Here you get to sample the goods up front, and you'll know that the goods really are good because they are that good. So give them a call, toll free, 866-928-3310. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.